It's gonna be that long either.
Well, you know, but that goes back to the people thing about our staff not knowing what time to negotiate.
When they don't want.
Good morning. Good morning. We're going to get started. Welcome to this meeting of the State Water Resources Control Board, scheduled for today, Wednesday, November 16, 2005. I am Tam Dodek, chair of the ward. With me are my colleagues to my left, member Jerry Secundi, to my right, member Art Baggett, and Richard Katz. We'll start today with some awards. Ms. Cantu, I always forget to introduce our staff. We're assisted today by Executive Director Celeste Cantu, Chief Counsel Michael Alfer, Deputy Director Tom Howard, Acting Deputy Director Beth Gines, and our Acting Clerk to the Board, Salika Potter, and Carmen. Thank you very much. All right, well, Ms. Cantu, we'll start with the awards.
The public participation program is very important as it provides an organized method of getting feedback and information to the board in a pre-decisional manner. And despite the fact that there has always been an attempt to listen to and elicit information from the public, the board felt that there was a distinct necessity to get that in a more organized framework and have it universal statewide. Because of this decision, it was necessary to have a training program on a speedy basis last year. That program involved a lot of hard work and careful coordination. It resulted in 12 separate training sessions statewide involving more than 650 staff and managers. The Babcock, Greg Gearhart, Karen O'Hare, Zori Lozano Friedrich, Barbara Anderson, Valerie Silva, Tom Mays, and Sandra Salazar Thompson, all of the Water Board. Thank you all very much for your successful efforts. The board would also like to recognize and give thanks to a number of people outside the board who were instrumental in making this program very successful. On behalf of the UC Davis Extension Land Use and Natural Resources Program, Jeff Liu is accepting for himself and Nancy Barker, Rose Cook, Kathy Hickey, Adam Fries, and Penny Stockdale. Also, the UC partnered with the Center for Collaborative Policy, Sacramento State University, and awards go to Sharon Huntsman, Laura Kaplan, and Jody Monahan, and also for MIG Incorporated, Lou Hexter. Thank you all very much for a successful effort.
My name is Esteban Almanza. I'm the Chief of Administrative Services, and it's my privilege today to present an award, the Jim Stafford Award, a person who exemplifies that excellence in customer service. And this year's recipient is one of our employees and personnel who provides service to our state and regional boards for payroll and benefits to those very important basic needs that all of us have in state service or any employment is our pay and our benefits. And she is... She provides that service with the utmost excellence in customer service. She was nominated from employees from both within the state board and the regional boards. So it's my honor now to present this award to Kathy Ralph.
As nervous as it makes me feel to be in front of people, excuse me, adults, I wanted to say thanks to a few people. First of all, I want to say how blessed and honored I feel to be a recipient of this special award. Thank you so much. I recognize that receiving this award does not make it all about me. It's about you. It's about the personnel group I've worked with since beginning state service, their leadership, their example. It's about the transaction group that I work with now. They're wonderful people. It's about the individuals from various orgs I work with. It's about Jim Stafford. I remember Jim Stafford and the smile seen on his face quite often, that I saw on his face quite often. We were in the old building at 9th and P Streets when I was new to state service, working in the OA classification. My desk was located near the entrance to the reproduction shop. Jim Stafford would come by my desk on his way to repro and would most always say hi. Sometimes he would stop to ask me how I was doing, how things were going, and always just really impressed me that he took the time for little me to see how I was doing, just to say hi. He was very personable and easy to chat with. I am privileged to have worked under his leadership and will never forget him. I want to express many thanks to the thoughtful people who nominated me. Thank you so much. Thanks for your determination. Thank you for letting me share this honor with you all. God bless you all. Thanks. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Congratulations to everyone. It's now time for our public forum, and I have one comment card from Mr. Jeff Wingfield, Port of Stockton.
Good quality in the San Joaquin Valley. The port has just purchased 3 new electric vehicles and is working with tenants and local tug companies to repower with cleaner burning engines. The port is improving stormwater support, training, and BMP assistance to tenants. We're upgrading infrastructure to greatly reduce the chance of possible stormwater impacts, and we are currently requiring ships to fill out ballast water inspection logs in order to verify that ships are making open ocean exchanges, as well as working with the State Lands Commission to identify other ways to reduce the risk of invasive species entering the Delta. We are currently partnering with the City of Stockton on a wetland area for bird watching, and we're also partnering with the California Delta Habitat and Education Foundation to establish a habitat sanctuary using one of the port-owned islands. The Delta Center will include natural and restored habitat, nature walk areas, a recreated Native American village, and an interpretive center. In addition, the port plans to take the following future actions. We are looking to implement an aquatic weed abatement program using mechanical techniques to avoid herbicide use. And we are looking for opportunities and partnerships to develop fish spawning habitat projects. We are establishing a stormwater field program for local high school students and development of an educational museum about the port, including water quality challenges, fish migration, delta levee challenges, and overall delta and deep water ship channel history. As a final note, I'd like to identify the statewide significance and benefits of the port and its projects in addition to the public benefits of improved goods movement. The critical location of the port's navigation infrastructure significantly benefits flood control, water supply, water quality, and ecosystem restoration in the Delta. The current ship channel provides the largest flood-carrying capacity channel for the San Joaquin Delta. Without the Stockton ship channel geometry, the flood protection for islands in the San Joaquin Delta would be much less. The Delta material from port projects could be used to strengthen critical Delta levees and create new environmental habitat areas. The dredge material could also be used to restore flooded levees, such as Frank's Tract and Big Break, to protect against salinity intrusion. Modeling has shown that the restoration of these levees would yield significant water quality benefits. Ongoing studies hopefully will allow us to reuse dredge material soon. Thank you for allowing us to use this public forum to update you on what's happening at the Port of Stockton.
Thank you very much.
Questions or comments? I move they be improved.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. We're up to item one, election of a new vice chair by the board. As you know, our previous vice chair, Pete Silva, is no longer with the board. We are sorry to see him go. We wish him well at Met. Now we look forward to the opportunity of working with one of our current colleagues as a new vice chair. Do I hear a nomination? Mr. Jerry Secundi has been nominated as vice chair and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Congratulations.
I'll abstain.
Notice I didn't ask for any abstention or no votes. All right. We're going to postpone both informational items and move to the consent agenda.
Good morning, Madam Chair and board members. I'm Darren Paul Hemis, Assistant Division Chief for the Division of Financial Assistance, and I'll be presenting item number 8 for you today. For my presentation, I would like to start with just a very brief review of some of the recent highlights with Los Osos Wastewater Project and its SRF loan, and I will be confining myself not to the 30 years, but to the very recent, so don't panic. On January 20th, 2005, the State Water Board approved a preliminary loan commitment for the Los Osos project. This commitment was project-specific, and I wish to emphasize that it was based on staff approvals and included a very specific project as outlined that the board approved. On May 20th, 2005, the Division of Financial Assistance issued an approval to award, setting the project budget based on the bids received for the project and appropriate allowances at approximately $135 million. The State Revolving Fund Installment Sales Agreement, or commonly referred to as a loan contract, for the project was executed on August 8, 2005. Los Osos Community Services District issued its notice to proceed to the construction contractors and began constructing the project on, I believe, August 22, 2005. On September 27, 2005, the voters of Los Osos Community Services District recalled three of their board members and passed Measure B. Measure B required all work to stop on the current treatment plant, the new site, and dictated a new site out of town to be located for the treatment plant to be located. It also set up conditions of approval for the new site, one of which is a majority vote of the district's voters to approve the new location. On October 6, 2005, the Los Osos Community Service District suspended work on its construction contracts. The Division of Financial Assistance issued a notice of withholding of all future loan repayments. Sorry, I missed a date there. I believe that was October 18th. And at this point, to date, we have disbursed approximately $6 million in loan funds and have a request from the district for another $6 million that has been held in-house and not released. On October 21st, at the request of Assemblyman Blakesley, discussions about how to move the project forward were held in San Luis Obispo. I participated in those discussions for the Division of Financial Assistance down in Los Osos. Subsequently, the district submitted a proposal on how to proceed while trying to identify an out-of-town site. Staff has reviewed this proposal and determined that the risks to the SRF program were too great and again requested that Los Osos Community Services District resume work on the previously approved project. Now, I'd just like to summarize with where staff current review of the project stands. The SRF loan is secured by a promise of future revenues. This means that we take a promise of the district to complete the project as approved and permitted by all its permitting agencies, and that at the conclusion of that project, that the district would be able to assess user fees for their wastewater system and then, based on that, repay the loan. So we operate pretty much on a basis of their promise to proceed and complete that activity. Measure B is an obstacle to completion of the current project, and until resolved, places this SRF loan at risk. The district has not indicated that it specifically intends to complete the project as...
Right, not in just in individual communities, but statewide, and we have an obligation to do that. The SRF fund is oversubscribed. We have hundreds of millions of dollars of requests that are waiting with projects that are ready to go, projects that would all improve water quality throughout California. And if the Los Osos community does not want to take advantage of this loan, there are a lot of other people that will. When Darren didn't go through the history, but for those who, you know, who we don't want to relive all of it, but just to point out, when the SRF program was created, Los Osos was one of the first 10 projects funded. We have funded and nearly completed over 1,000 projects so far, and this isn't one of them. This one hasn't been done. So I think the proposal before us, one, protects water quality, and second, because of the structure of phasing out payments in direct proportion to the ability of the district to bond to pay back that money, we protect the SRF fund and we're able to avoid the first and only default in the history of the SRF program. That proposal and that securitization is an integral part of this proposal, and that I would hope the board would move forward, the local board would move forward. Finally, let me just say that this is not a negotiation. This is a last, best, and final offer. And speaking for myself, that's all right, Ann. We'll deal with it. Speaking for myself, this is a, as I said, it's a last, best, and final offer. It's up to the district. I would amend, Tam, I would put into the motion that the district needs to respond to us one way or the other by close of business next Wednesday. That gives them 1 week to respond. I understand they have a meeting scheduled for tomorrow night. I understand they have meetings fairly regularly at this point in Los Osos. That is more than enough time for an adequate response. Failure to respond will be deemed a negative response. The only acceptable response from my perspective is a yes, we agree, and we will move forward under those provisions and then be able to access the loan after the securitization and all the other milestones are met. So there are a number of milestones in this. There are a number of benchmarks in this, but the bottom line is this is the deal. It's up to the district now. This is the Water Board's attempt to allow them to deal with their financial issues, to phase the project in over time, as Assemblyman Blakeslee had suggested, in a way that gets this project accomplished, protects water quality, and allows the district to deal with their financial situation.
Thank you. For those of us board members who have not been involved, perhaps Mr. Pohemas could expand upon the proposal.
Sure.
Madam Chair, I think actually that Mr. Lawfer is going to go through the proposal. And if the members of the audience would simply bear with us, so I know that all of you do not know the exact parameters of the proposal. Mr. Lawfer?
Thank you, Board Member Secundi and Board Member Katz. Essentially, what Board Member Katz has been describing is a recent effort by Assemblymember Blakeslee and Board Members Secundi and Katz to address the fundamental concerns that the Water Board has identified with the Los Osos project, essentially allowing SRF payments to go forward while ensuring that the SRF, the state revolving fund, is secured, because this is, as Mr. Katz had indicated, is a fund that we use with federal money that we have bonded to. We've issued bonds, revenue bonds, so that we have resources available to fund projects throughout the state, and we have to protect the taxpayers, by which local government creates an assessment to fund and essentially tax its local citizens. And that Prop 218 vote would be designed to ensure that any work that the state board reimburses on a collection system in Los Osos would have the financial security, the revenue stream coming from that Prop 218 vote. Now, up until that time, there are a number of things the state board requires to provide the necessary assurances. One is the Los Osos Community Services District needs to realize that Measure B is precluding the funding from the SRF program. It is an obstacle, as Mr. Pohemas indicated. And the Los Osos Community Services District needs to take efforts in court, including filing an amicus brief, to invalidate Measure B. The next most important item for the Community Services District to put forward as a show of good faith is they need to immediately undertake an effort to mitigate the ongoing water quality problems in Los Osos. There are a number of things they could address. They could look at pumping out particularly problematic septic systems, but there needs to be concrete on-the-ground efforts to mitigate the ongoing water quality problems in Los Osos. This has been a 30-year problem, and so far we have almost nothing to show for it. So the next feature, and this is what Mr. Katz was referring to, is there needs to be a bond to secure. I'm sorry.
I have a question on your prior comment. So, I mean, that sounds pretty vague. They have to pump out problematic septics. Is this under a time schedule order? Is there going to be some enforceable action taken by us or the regional board so that there is actually they pumped out every month, every 1 week, every day? I mean, it's
at this point in time, this has not been fleshed out in great detail. It is something that is very important that the staff and board members Katz and Secundi need to see, is something concrete to begin improving water quality, because so far all we've seen are delays in the construction of a wastewater treatment plant and collection system, and we need to see on-the-ground improvements during the time that we're considering this.
Michael, let me just add to Art's comment before you go on to the bonding measure, and my apologies for getting ahead of the presentation in terms of why. It was our feeling that to make it clear that this isn't the way we prefer to do business, the way this whole thing's been handled in Los Osos, that it was important that the Community Services District do something to begin immediately offsetting the water quality problems. As the audience may not be aware, but the board members clearly are, we don't have the ability to have those discussions with the regional board because of the separation of authority and powers in this. But I would not be surprised to see there's some direct proportion between the amount of activity the local district undertakes and the fines that may or may not be assessed by the regional board. And that may go to the time order that Art's talking about, or the amount of fines. My guess would be could be largely dependent on how aggressive they are about cleaning out those septics. But as we're working our way through the rest of this process, we need to see improvements to water quality. Morro Bay is a significant area, has been for years, has been going on for 30 years, and it has to end.
The next phase, and this gets to the heart of the SRF issue, is if the state board is going to be cutting checks from the SRF, there needs to be security that we will get the money back. With Measure B on the ballot, there is no treatment plant being constructed, and that treatment plant was to be the source of revenue that would reimburse the SRF. In other words, it would make their loan payments. So if the Community Services District is able to secure a bond in order to provide the site for a project that's in compliance with Measure B.
So 24 and 25 are screwed.
I guess the good news is I just missed the fire drill on my floor. I just mentioned that the Community Services District needs to be honest that any work that they're doing at the Tri-W site could go either way. It could go towards a project compliant with Measure B or compliant with the existing project. And that's necessary because otherwise we just simply cannot fund the project under the SRF. And the final point is, because there's still a risk involved in this and a great degree of uncertainty, and this is a good faith effort by the board to resolve the matters and allow the project to go forward as quickly as possible, all of this needs to be coupled with releases. I mean, Los Osos has a history of litigation amongst all the different parties involved. We need to resolve that if the board is even to contemplate this offer. The next phase, as set forward by board members Katz and Secundi and Assemblymember Blakeslee, is triggered by the Prop 218 vote. If the Prop 218 vote fails, the SRF contract terminates. The Water Board will be able to recover its SRF monies through the bond that the LOCSD is able to secure in Phase 1. If the Prop 218 vote, which is this tax or assessment, passes, that means we now have the dedicated revenue source that will allow the SRF to continue reimbursing the collection or payments for the collection system. The nominal work that I described in Phase 1 could continue at the Tri-W site. Any payments that the Water Board makes from the SRF will be up to the amount that's secured by that dedicated revenue stream from the Prop 218 vote. And simultaneously with this, there needs to be resolution within Los Osos about Measure B. And the third phase is essentially a Measure B vote. There are problems that have been identified throughout this process with Measure B as it currently stands. We are always hopeful that the courts will resolve this and recognize that Measure B is fundamentally flawed. But the citizens of Los Osos have an opportunity to correct this by moving forward with a vote to repeal Measure B or to modify it as necessary. If the Measure B vote fails, Because the Prop 218 vote will have already passed, the work on the collection system can continue. But at this point, at that point in time, because there would be no commitment from Los Osos to continue with the treatment works, that part of the SRF loan, which is a $46 million component to build the treatment plant at Tri-W, would terminate. If the Measure B repeal vote passes, we are essentially back in the situation that we were earlier this summer. They are on track to build a treatment plant, and the SRF payments under the existing loan could continue with actually higher security for the State Board because the Prop 218 vote will have also provided us additional revenue streams. That is essentially the proposal that Mr. Kath is describing.
Before, a couple points, Michael. Thank you for going holiday. It protects the SRF fund. It solves a problem in Morro Bay that's been there for more times than we'd like to think about. And, you know, and I do, and I think, before I turn over to Jerry, I also appreciate Assemblyman Blakesley's involvement and his efforts and his work on this. I believe we have we had an email from the supervisor in the area who represents the area in support of this idea and in support of what the board's putting forward. And turn it back to Tam and Jerry.
Michael, I just wanted to make certain that, did you mention the amicus curiae brief also? If you didn't, would you please?
I believe I did, but that would be the first element, that the CSD would have to file an amicus brief in order to make it clear that Measure B is the obstacle and then has to be in opposition to Measure B.
In other words, they would actively seek to invalidate Measure B in the judicial process.
Yeah, I've got some comments. I guess before, just so people can understand my position, and this might seem a little at odds for those who know me, and I am not, I'm generally a strong supporter of settlements and negotiations. I think that's the preferable way to do a lot of what we do.
There's no fire.
The fire has been called? I think given the fact that, you know, I did spend 8 years as a county supervisor that had more than one dependent wastewater district, and I'm painfully aware of what it's like to raise fees and be a local official and deal with contentious issues such as that from that standpoint. You know, that being said, I have a real challenge here. To be able to go in and renegotiate an NPDES permit or water quality order, a loan which is built to comply with that order, I think it's a slippery slope that we don't even want to begin down. So you have a local referendum, and by a local referendum, you can basically void or alter or change a water quality standard, and especially on something like this, where you're dealing with 30 years in a national marine sanctuary. This is septics. We aren't talking here like in the Central Valley, where I do have a lot of empathy, where you're talking, you know, reverse osmosis for part per billion of some CTR constituent. Here we're talking about septic systems. This is not some molecule chase here. This is pretty significant. And anybody who's been down there and seen the results, you don't have to go with a test in the water to figure out what's going on in Morro Bay. You just go down there and look, and you can tell by visual observation. I just have a real challenge, one, with even negotiating. That being said, I'll withhold until I hear the comments, and I appreciate the efforts of my colleagues, but I just think we're setting ourselves up for every community in the state, or if a business cuts a deal, starts building a facility to comply with NPDES permit, they're bought out by another corporation, they come back and say, well, we don't like where they build it, we don't like what they're building, we think there are standards and the kind of issues we're dealing with. In California, as everybody knows, we're tougher, and we pride ourselves on being great protectors of the environment and water quality. So just so you know, coming in, we're stake out at least my thoughts.
Thank you. I will reserve my comments after I hear from our many speakers. For those who are here for the TMDLs, you should know that I have 13 comment cards on this issue. So it's not likely that we'll get to it before 11 o'clock. Let's first hear I'm sorry, 11, before noon, which, boy, I'm operating a different time, and at which time we do need to go into closed session on a legal matter. So let's, for those, let me change my statement. For those who are here from the TMDLs, please return at 1 o'clock. Time flies when you're having fun. All right. I believe I have four comment cards from representatives of the district, the Los Osos district. So if I could ask those people to come up, please. The president of the district, Ms. Lisa Schicker, the vice president, and the interim general manager, and a Mr. John McClendon, all of Los Osos.
Good morning, Ms. Doda. Good morning, board. Thank you. My name is Lisa Schicker. I am the duly elected president of the board of the Los Osos Community Services District. I've been serving on the board since December 2004, and I have been before your board before in January. I'd first like to say that I think there might be a misperception about who our board is, and I very much would like to clear that up, but I don't know how to do that in a short amount of time. But I am a member of the environmental community, a very active member. I'm a biologist, a professional biologist, and environmental planner. And I was involved with forming the Mora Bay Estuary Program when it first began. So I'm very concerned about the bay, and that's one of the main reasons that I ran for office. I'm concerned about putting a sewer plant in a ditch upstream of the Mora Bay National Estuary. I think it's a big mistake. That's all we've ever been about, was to try to move it out of town. That's really it. It's really that simple. There's nothing about delay about me. I've always wanted to take care of the water of our town, and I know that the rest of my board feels the same way. So I really would like that opportunity to share with you. I've had a little bit of difficulty getting in touch, and I know you're very busy, but I've been making great attempts to try to reach you. I just wanted to say at this point in juncture that your staff report is missing some very important elements that your board would maybe want to be informed about, and they're not here. And, you know, I don't know if this is the appropriate time to go through all those points or if there's a better time, but the staff report is seriously lacking in many areas. And I have those corrections, but there's quite a few. There's also quite a few things missing out of the staff report that I thought would interest your board, a lot of things that have been going on at the staff level that your board may not be aware of. And because you are
insignificant items.
The one or two most significant items are there's some dates that are completely incorrect, and there's quite a bit of missing information about the process and procedure that occurred in the evolvement of this loan. And those things are missing. And
but those things do not detract from where we are today, meaning the status of the project today.
Yes.
That representation is correct in the staff report.
But there's quite a few missing elements that were that are missing. And so that's why I would like to augment the report, mentioning some of the things that are in your resolution that are not there. The main one that's of most importance, I believe, is that your board may not have been appraised of this, but your staff was appraised that there was a recall election and an initiative petition that were on the ballot when the money was released this summer. Just a mere 7 working days before the election, that was in full knowledge that those things were on the table. And they were presented to the staff. Everybody knew about them. So our question is, if you were concerned about those issues, why did the money get released? You had every ability and right to withhold money until the election to see what would happen. Now we're in a crisis because we have contractors on the ground. And that's all. That we just don't understand why you couldn't have waited a few days to
Thank you.
See the outcome of the election.
Mr. Pohemus?
Madam Chair, the SRF loan was released to a legitimate district that made a complete and thorough application. They met all the SRF policies. We had no reason to deny them, and we certainly don't look into the crystal ball and could tell what was going to happen in a future recall. So, you know, that was all speculative, and we felt obliged to follow the policy as given to us by the board and issue that loan.
Got a Where was the NPDES permit at this point to build this plant? I assume there was some time requirement
Well, then maybe the regional board could answer that, but I assume these plans have been in compliance with the permit issued to meet certain water quality standards. And was that permit was running or the time to comply with the terms of that permit? I assume they couldn't just wait 5 years to build it after the regional board.
Well, they
made arrangement.
Yeah, you know. There's been I believe a time schedule order that they were under for quite some time.
That's what I thought.
And that had actually been out of compliance with that and the final dates of compliance within that for some time as well. I can't recall the exact amount. So they were beyond the schedule given to them by the regional board.
So in fact, I guess I would appears, so I think the state board, SRF staff, certainly wanted to be the ones holding up a district from complying with the time schedule, a valid time schedule order.
That's correct.
So you were doing what we keep encouraging you to get the money out the door as fast as you can to clean up problems.
Right. We would have been basically complicit with preventing them from meeting the time schedule order as dictated to them by the regional board.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Should we wait for Mr. Baggett's return?
No, please. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board. My name is Dan Blesky. I'm the interim general manager for the Los Osos Community Service District. I haven't been there all that long, but it's been a wild ride. I just wanted to kind of make a few comments on some of the things that I've looked at, and coming in with a fresh set of eyes, I think those observations are what happened prior to the recall election is when you look at the full context of the ISA and certain board policies, you find that oversight is contained in those documents. And as my board president explained, 7 days before the mandated September 20th award of contract with the ability to do in a 90-day extension is not a prudent thing to do. I've dealt with federal funds myself for 29 years. That is not in your staff report. So there was flexibility and safeguards that were provided for all along this process, and the plausible denial of certain folks that were in the oversight capacity have failed up to the point of the 27th of September. Another thing that needs to be cleared up is that I'm not sure if you have a copy of the board resolution that basically was perfected our November 30th action accepting the state SRF counteroffer. There's something else missing in there. We proposed, they countered, and we accepted that. The other thing is this perception that my board is about stopping this project is quite, that's been a huge thing, a huge image problem for us. It's not about stopping the project. It's about moving a major component of the project. This is done all the time in major construction projects. It's done regularly. Major modification to foundations that do affect siting. So that ability is there. That ability is also provided for in the ISA. I would also offer that if you were to read my November 3rd letter explaining our position on the rights, responsibilities, and remedies provided in the ISA, this is SRF staff's own document that they approved, they wrote it, that they have not exhausted those remedies, that by the course that they have put all of this project, including both of our boards in, this morass, by not executing those remedies, basically, it's just incomprehensible that when we look at the scope, it provides for the relocation due to, and I'll read this to you because I want to get this in the record. When you look at Section 13 of the scope, it's called notices. Not to mention SRF staff did act on a complaint by a party not to the SRF, not in accordance with the notice requirements of the ISA contract. But let me read Section 13. It says, the agency agrees to promptly notify the division in writing of any circumstance, combination of circumstances or condition which is expected to or does delay completion of construction for a period of 90 days or more beyond the estimated date of completion of construction previously provided by the division. And I won't get into the next paragraph on that, but that base, the next paragraph in that same section allows for the reciting of projects, or at least alludes to it, if we would have had
proposal. What the State Board said is that it would be agreeable to present a list of items to its staff and board members to see whether or not that was acceptable. That was something that Assemblyman Blakeslee put together, certainly with help from the state staff. But when it was presented to the state staff and members of the board, it was rejected. It was never a proposal on our part. That's number one. Number two, we didn't create this mess. We had an agreement. We, the state board, had an agreement for a specific project at a specific site given a specific time frame. Proposition B invalidated that. We didn't do anything. We had a prior agreement, period.
Did you care for a response, Mr. Sagani?
And one other thing just to add into it, because I'm sort of tired of hearing about it. You know, the State Board staff in letting in allowing the money to go out followed the established procedures. It would have been very easy if the State Board had varied from that to hold up, in light of an election, someone to make the charge that we were trying to interfere in the election by holding up the funds. So the fact that the board staff followed the exact same procedure they do with every loan that comes up is of critical importance here. That was the process that was followed by board staff.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm John McClendon. I'm the interim district counsel for the LOCSD. And a note for the record that we're doing our best to conserve energy. I noticed you putting your jackets on this morning. The room is rather cold. I'd like to correct a couple of things. One is that the proposal asks for a bond without anyone ever looking and inquiring into whether or not that bond can be obtained, whether there are the assets to cover that. I believe that based upon what we've seen with some handling of the finances of the district, a bond in the amount of what you're initially talking about, it's approximately $18 million, security simply wouldn't cover that. The second issue I would like to bring up is there's a requirement that we have to file an amicus brief. It's a little surprising to me, but what apparently is missing here is the suit that is in front of the Court of Appeal right now is currently the suit which the CSD filed as a pre-ballot challenge to Measure B. The CSD won at the trial court level. The challengers took it to appeal. And at the appellate court level, the appellate court, with about 2 hours turnaround time, issued a stay on which allowed the election to go forward. The CSD has since that time filed briefs opposing Measure B. This amicus brief that you're talking about, there is no need for that. We are not an amicus as a non-party. This is our lawsuit challenging Measure B. Okay, so that needs to be clarified. The last thing I'd like to say is, you know, your counsel and Mr. Palemas have it right. On the one hand, your counsel has correctly noted that we do not have the ability currently to build at this site in light of the voters' approval of Measure B. Under the Lockyer versus San Francisco case, the one dealing with the preliminary test shows that the woman is carrying the Measure B gene. And they start thinking about it and thinking, wow, well, this could cause a potential defect. And so when this initially comes out, everybody in their families is saying, we need to hold off on this. Hold off just a little bit. There's a test coming out next month that will tell whether or not for sure you have this. And the couple says, no, we're in a hurry to get this done. We want to get married so bad. We've got to do this right away. Can't wait for the month for that extra test. So they go ahead. They don't have a crystal ball. They go ahead and get married. Sure enough, they have a Measure B baby. Question, is the father responsible? Does he have to pay child support? Thank you.
First of all, counselor, I don't even think your parable merits a response, number one. I find it offensive and inappropriate. Number two, you're the current counsel for the Community Services District?
That's correct.
You intend to go into court and ask that Measure B be overturned, that the earlier court ruling that found Measure B unconstitutional be sustained?
The current posture of the district, nothing has changed.
Of us that are stupid, why don't you say it slowly? Do you intend to go into court and argue that Measure B should be overturned?
You're asking me for matters that we will discuss in my closed session, just as you have closed session on litigation matters, and I do not discuss those in open session here.
I'm sorry, you just said it's the position of your board is unchanged. What is the position of your board relative to the action that's pending before the court?
My board has not taken a position. My board will take a position tomorrow night following the action of this board.
So in other words, we don't know whether your board, the current board, is going to maintain the previous position of opposition to Measure B, correct?
We have a standoff.
I'm sorry?
We have a standoff.
What do you mean you have a standoff?
Well, my board will not meet until tomorrow. I cannot speak to my board.
What I said was, we don't know whether your board will maintain the previous board's position in opposition to Measure B.
We don't know.
Okay. Therefore, our requirement that this board, that your board go on record in opposition to Measure B could be appropriate after your board, you know, is an appropriate consideration for your board meeting tomorrow night.
Is it agendized? Is that what you're asking on closed session?
Well, frankly, it's a part of litigation. You can discuss it in litigation. In closed session.
Correct.
Fine. And by the way, the gestation period in this thing was 30 years, not 2 weeks.
All right. Let's move on. I have a card from the vice president of the board as well. Does he wish to speak?
Madam Chair and board, just quickly. I'm one of the new board members through the recall process. I'm also a registered civil engineer to practice civil engineering in California. I don't want to understand your position, where you're at today on your side of the table. I would just like to clarify a little bit of my position on the board as a new board member. I was elected from a recall election of three, the majority of the board from the original board, mainly because it has since grown to today. Not our intent to stop work, just to suspend and try to understand what was facing us at the time. As a result of that, we are where we are today. We were hoping to be able to come to an agreement with the state to be able to appease our community with a different siting of the facility at a peripheral, out-of-town location that kind of got it away from everybody, out of sight, out of mind. And I think, I know that's what the community would like to see happen. And so that's why we were doing the things that we were doing the last 6 weeks. Understand that you're the bank and you have the purse strings and your position is different from our position as trying to represent the community and what they'd like to do. It's something that we have to live with for the rest of our lives and our children's lives, of the location and the siting of that plant. That's a 50-year design life, if not longer. So the preference of the community was to site it someplace outside of town, and they felt like at the time Measure B passed that they really never had a voice in that. And were able to express their opinion for a number of years. And so that's the reason why I think people just stood up and said, look, this is our last resort. We've got to change the board and pass Measure B so we can re-site this facility. And that's what we're asking and trying to negotiate with the current board with the SRF loan, was to be able to continue construction of the collection system and the disposal facility and relocate the treatment facility outside of town. That's one component out of three. And also, at the same time, save the community some money. And that's the other issue of this, was the community felt like they were being overburdened by the cost of this system, and they wanted something that was less expensive. Now, we've lost opportunity to save a lot of money, but we thought we could at least save some money with a treatment facility outside of town where the siting conditions are much less expensive to build on. That's why there was a recall effort. That's why it succeeded. And that's why Measure B was passed. It's a siting of the treatment facility outside of town instead of being in the center of town. And that's kind of, in a nutshell, why we're here today. Understand that this loan is specific to a project. We were hoping that we could be able to work through the issues and come up to, we felt like we had a small window of opportunity over 30 years. And I understand the history. I've only been in Los Osos for about 6 years myself, 7 years. I know there's a long history, and no doubt about it, I don't question it. I don't question that our water quality needs to be managed very smartly, and we need to do that. Our water basin is that's our self-sustaining water supply, and we do not want to import state water unless it's absolutely necessary. So what we were trying to do was come up, we felt like we had a small window of opportunity to satisfy our water quality issues and our community's desires by changing the siting of the treatment facility only. And that's where we were headed towards, and that's where we were hoping to get. And we thought we had a fairly good proposal from our end. Obviously, you've disagreed with that. But I just wanted to just lay it
about the new site, that there will not be a delay in terms of getting a permit from the Coastal Commission, from the county. Why do you feel that that's going to be smooth sailing compared to the Tri-W site?
That's a valid question. A smooth sailing is definitely a difficult thing in Los Osos. The couple of meetings that we had when we actually gave the proposal to the community, they were very receptive of that on both sides of the aisle. We had people that were supporting us on our proposal that have been a proponent of the Tri-W site, and they said they really don't care where it's sited. And these are the people that come to our meetings week in and week out. We also had people on the other side of the aisle that said that they weren't satisfied with the proposal, but they would support it. So I think we've got that inner 70 or 80% of the people. Maybe we don't have the outer fringes of the 10 or 15% on either end, but we feel like we're pretty well secured the center of the community. I agree with you, sir, that the community has been 30 years. I think it's changed a little bit over the years. There's a lot of people that have come and gone. I think the makeup of the community is a little bit different today than what it was even 5 years ago. It's not quite the same, even though there are people that have been there throughout this whole process. I've heard from both sides. But when we did actually give this to the community and showed them what we proposed and had it in writing, we had it out on the tables, we were getting it. We were getting support from both sides of the aisle. Litigation, I can't address that. I there's no guarantees on whether or not something would be litigated.
I think at this point, each speaker's troubling. It's troubling me even more. I mean, you're a registered civil engineer. You've got obviously experience in wastewater design at some point in your career, college if nothing else. So when you ran for the board, you hadn't thought about how you would deal with this, how you'd pay for it? I mean, that's cost accounting, that's basic engineering.
Well, yes, there's...
You hadn't thought this thing through, so now you wait till you get on a board. You ran affirmatively on a recall campaign, ran with a major.
I didn't run the major myself. That was.
But you ran with that, I assume you ran on that platform, if you will, of moving it out of downtown, and you hadn't thought through how you would deal with this?
I mean, we understood that there was always some opportunity to modify the loan agreement. We understood that from earlier conversations. There was maybe some opportunity to modify the current contract to accommodate that and still be able to retain the loan.
I guess it's what's troubling me at this point is you have, as a professional in your field, I guess I have to hold you to a higher standard than in your decision making. Even though this wasn't your client, you do have that professional standard, just like an attorney member of a board has the background, or you have a scientist on your board who understands the biology. I mean, it gets more and more troubling. We're not dealing with your normal lay elected officials. It's beginning to appear to me. And to have not thought through some of these concerns, and if you have an attorney on the board, then I'll really be concerned. But
the other thing, for clarification, there was never any discussion of this going to another site or modifying that agreement. I mean, I sat through those hearings. I remember the hearings up here, and I remember how specific the board was in saying to everyone who asked, this is a site-specific.
In the capacity of the Los Osos Technical Task Force, they had already formed, and John Fouché, the vice president, and the president, Lisa Schicker, were both members of the technical task force. They formed in an effort to come up with a plan to change the site of the sewer and look at the EIR and some of the other work. In fact, they came before this board in January and had produced this report about the state revolving fund loan, the controversy that was surrounding the loan, with a request not to increase the loan, but to allow us to build a lower cost facility that was based on the EIR, but had been rejected. And they also had put together a video. It was a year ago that I was requested by one of the board members, Gordon Hensley, to look into a pond-based treatment system outside of town, which had been proposed in 2000, 2003. And as the project changed over time, in the value engineering, for instance, it went from basically an extended aeration system to a MBR system, and several parts were deferred. So we have a lot of costs that still remain after this project would be completed. And so our goal was to lower the cost, because at over $200 a month, which the community didn't learn about until that December meeting when the revenue plan was updated, there was an outcry from the community to find a lower cost alternative. Even some of the people who kind of liked the idea of throwing a park in and getting it paid for with state revolving fund loan money. At over $30,000 per household, your guarantee is actually the homes of about a third of the people in the community. That's outrageously expensive. And the compromise, what it did was to take the facility plan and the numbers that had been put together over the last year and present those and go through those numbers and look to see how much savings was there. To continue with the collection system, which was the critical path, and actually that work started up October 21st, and it's in progress today. They're putting pipe in. And to locate the plant on one of several areas that had been identified earlier in the EIR. Because ag exchange is a requirement now of the Coastal Commission, we're going to have to pipe our effluent out there anyway. And so this would take care of that issue. It also helps us to keep from importing water, because imported water is now part of the plan if we build at Tri-W. This was really truly a win-win-win, because we did get a lot of people from both sides to accept this proposal, which you, I don't know if you saw it or you just, if staff just rejected it. But some of the benefits was that the construction would resume immediately. It would address deferred costs and actually build in systems for sludge stabilization. The out-of-town location created an opportunity for sewering locations outside of the prohibition zone. In other words, greater water quality protection by including the entire Los Osos service area instead of just a prohibition zone. It also allowed an alternative site to have ample. Measure B has become a real thorn in a lot of people's side. But it really is just a siting ordinance, and it just says, can we move the plant to a place that's appropriate for the future? And in the process of doing that, lower the cost by about $20 to $30 million. And over time, the energy use in the two types of plants will also add up to about $20 million. So in that perspective, I guess you can see maybe why Los Osos thought this was a good idea. And again, if you did not get a copy of what we presented last January about the controversy and the probable default that we predicted back then when we gave our presentation, I have that for you.
Before you go, Ms. McPherson, you're saying this material was I was not on the board last January, neither was Ms. Doduk. We are two new board members, as you know. But this material was presented to the board and to the staff last January and was rejected. Is that correct?
I don't know that it was rejected. Actually, they said that the project was specific to
Tri-W because the board that we had, the majority board, was voting for Tri-W. And we had a minority of two that were not. And so we said we have a recall in progress and a permit revocation and three lawsuits, and we expect that that we will be moving the site. And at that point...
Thank you, Ms. McPherson. I would like to hear from my two colleagues who were on this board in January with respect to this issue.
Now, let's say very clearly, first of all, just to the, in general... If you all have a problem with our decisions, it's not our staff. It's the board. We step up. We take a responsibility. So don't blame our staff if you're unhappy or assume they didn't send stuff to us. We've been informed.
I didn't
assume
that. I'm sorry.
Excuse me. We've been informed. We saw the report. We also heard from the majority of your board in January, and we made decisions accordingly. But they're board decisions. Our staff has been working very closely with us. We've been aware of all the things that have been going on in Los Osos. Gentlemen didn't know if we knew there was a recall election going on in Los Osos. People on the moon know there's a recall election going on in Los Osos. I mean, everyone's aware of what's been going on here. So it's not a case of this board not being informed. You know, I think that it's important, and I appreciate Alexis being here because US EPA Region 9 has endorsed the proposal that this board put forth today, or is putting forward today. One of your members of your board of supervisor has. Tam, in that sense, we were aware, we knew, we looked at it, didn't make it. It was very clear to everybody involved. One question after maybe our speech, I'd like Ms. McPherson to answer. I mean, this site that answers all questions and all problems, do you have a site under control? Do you have site plans? Do you have environmental clearance? Do you have a coastal permit? Do you have anything that indicates a site anywhere else is going to go forward on paper, locked in, ready to go? Yes or no?
The EIR identified a superior site out of town.
Do you own the site?
Chosen. We have a willing seller.
But you don't have it, but you're not... You don't have an offer on the table, do you? You haven't bought the site. You don't control the site. And you don't know if somebody else is going to bid for the site or someone's going to sue about the site. You don't know any of those things.
I had understood you saying that when we came to you in January that we weren't talking about. This is the first you'd heard of a different site.
Second board meeting now, 7 years ago, before gray hair. When we had an American Rivers Canyon, some people might still remember that, an NPDES permit, an SRF loan, the same issue, and the former chair, Mr. Stub Chair, let it go for a while. And I think then I made it clear. I have great respect for local government. I still consider myself, that's where my roots are. That's where I'll end up. I understand the difficulties. But the bottom line from where we sit on these issues is if a duly elected board works out something with their engineering staff, with our technical staff, it's not this board's job on a state revolving fund issue to second-guess the technical engineering. We have one engineer on the board now. The rest of us aren't. Even that one engineer, it's not our job to re-engineer. Our job is to uphold our regional board, has permit effluent requirements. We don't design the plant. We approve the design. The design meets those requirements, or it's supposed to. That's why you have the engineers design it. All we are dealing with is strictly a funding issue based on a representation that the CEQA compliance is done, that the board voted, that they can repay the loan and meet all of the requirements which Darren and Ann and our staff put through the legal certainty and contracts of the SRF process. It's not our job to second-guess where, why, or anything else. There was a board who voted, who had a project before us, asked us to fund it. We funded it. And if we start going back onto every single SRF loan, you couldn't do it. It's inappropriate, and I don't think it's even legal.
Hello. My name is Alon Perlman. I live in the Prohibition Zone in Los Osos. And thank you for hearing my comments. Have you started my clock? Or you may want to do that. I heard a bunch of things but the truth is the staff proposal that you have before you, which you're...
Could you please get closer to the microphone?
Thank the you. Staff proposal that you have before you does omit the event of the election. The election did take place on September 27th, and the board members, which had misinformed you and had misinformed the public, were recalled. Now, it's very hard to recall a board, as you know, particularly when work has started on a project. The people who live in Los Osos were very concerned.
I'm sorry, I have to interject. Who misinformed us? How did they misinform us?
Various statements, for example, as to pollution entering the bay. Would you care to go into detail?
No, go ahead and finish.
Besides, I'm public, so please allow me a little bit. But the misinformation that took place that I'm referring to is that the previous board, as they were being recalled, had more advertising money for people to vote against that recall. They had the project going in. They had everything going for them to not be recalled. They were recalled because they exhibited bad government, because the people of Los Osos were able to recognize bad government, such as saltwater intrusion, recharging of groundwater, sufficiency of water supplies, sustainability. All those issues were not maintained by the previous board. And no matter what the quality of the submissions that they made to you, the people of Los Osos recognized that they were getting a pig in a poke. This is not just an issue of not in my backyard. The ag land outside of Los Osos is perfect location for a sewer plant. It's perfect. In fact, it smells like cows go there, which is what they do. It's appropriate to put a sewer out of town. And the people of Los Osos were denied that choice. They have now informed you, the state, of their true choice, a choice that the three previous directors forced on that community. And for that reason, I would like that you entertain working outside the box. Yes, there's a slippery slope in Los Osos. It's understandable that you would be reacting to ACT, but Los Osos is unique. If you are ever to make an exception, then Los Osos is that place that you would be wanting to make that, because it's so contentious, because it's unique in the world. And you're all 100% aware of it. I know that some new board members aren't. I myself have only lived in Los Osos for 2 years. I found it to be a beautiful place. I'd like to live there the rest of my life, and I'd like to continue to know the little old ladies who live there and who are very concerned that they're going to have to sell their houses and move out of town because they can't afford upwards of $200 a month for sewer, and in addition, the siting. Now, some of the monies, who knows where the money went. The previous board was not responsible. They did not indicate to us that they were going to try and get this project to be cheaper. I won't go into the details. I was present at meetings. I was present at meetings where the budget was clearly a mess and other people could address that, and yet the board did not make it a priority to fix anything. They pushed the election to the latest date that they could have so that they could force this sewer onto the town, knowing fully well that the town didn't want it. So I'm basically calling for justice. If you can find within, let's avoid all the legal situations, I mean, just out of pure kindness, this is not what Los Osos wants. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Daniela Anon.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the board. I'm Daniela Arnon. I'm a resident of Los Osos, and I'm deeply concerned about the environment in Los Osos. And the project at the Tri-W site is a terrible project environmentally, and it's a terrible project to have the treatment plant built on the Tri-W site. It would be terrible for the community as well. We don't have enough green space in the town. It's our only green space. It's right above the bay. Does it make sense to put a treatment plant right above the bay? We know they spill. It is Esha. We prefer to, and there has been a lot of spin, so it's very difficult to separate truth from fiction in Los Osos. Lisa Schicker, our president of RCSD, and Julie Tacker ran in November 2004 on a Move the Sewer platform. And the recall and the Move the Sewer ballot completed that process because the majority of the town would like a treatment plant out of town, and we always wanted appropriate technology. The original CSD promised, ran on the old CSD on a platform of appropriate technology, and then they switched 180 degrees to a conventional sewer plant. So what we're asking is if it is possible to change the location of the treatment plant and work with us, work with our new board. We have a wonderful new board. They're honest. They're engineers. They care about the community and the environment. I believe the former CSD really cared more about money and development. And so I urge you to work with our new board. I urge you not to adopt the resolution that's before you today. And I urge you to consider the compromise that was made between Mr. Pohemus and our CSD and our assemblyman, Mr. Blakesley. I think they all had wonderful intentions, and that would be a win-win situation. So if the project could be amended, I think it would be, it really would be a win-win situation. I urge you to consider the compromise that came from those 5 days of meetings with Mr. Blakesley. Thank you.
Ms. Arnon, I have to correct the record. There was no compromise reached. There was no agreement ever reached by Mr. Pohemus and Mr. Blakesley. There was a proposal that was going to be given to the staff and certain board members of the State Water Board. That's all there was. There was never a compromise, okay. Never an agreement.
Well, then I urge you to consider that proposal, adopting that proposal.
The other thing, and I have to say this, you know, I've now heard several speakers say that the farmland outside of the city is the ideal place for a sewage treatment plant. It has taken you 30 years to figure that out. Where have you been?
Well, there are a lot of things that happened, and I don't think that our new CSD board should be punished for the mistakes of the former CSD board. And in truth, it's possible. Well, I don't even want to go there, but there's more history than that. And I think it's a shame that you're so tired of Los Osos, because with our new board, they're ready to go. They've been studying, going over all the data, all the reports, and I really urge you to work with this great group of people. And many of us trust them implicitly, and we didn't trust the previous board. They were not representing the community.
You know, one thing I think is worth mentioning, there's nothing that prevents your CSD from building a treatment plant wherever they want. You owe us $6 million that we've already spent there. You're perfectly capable of going out, figuring out how to pay for it on your own. The reason we're having this discussion is you want access to our reduced rate loan fund. And that came, and we agreed to do that for a specific site for a specific program. If you don't want our loan fund, if you don't want to take advantage of reduced loan rates, the motion that this board will consider shortly tells you how to take advantage of that benefit to you. If you don't want to take advantage of it, you don't have to. You can do whatever you want.
Where is the wisdom in releasing the loan, in starting a project less than a month before a recall election?
The most wisdom is in the five other communities that are dying to start projects today.
Yeah.
That will take the money that you guys have been, you know, when we first started this, if you guys have been really smart, this was a grant program when this was first offered to you. You wouldn't have had to pay it back. But you have played around with this for so long that it's no longer a grant. It's a loan. If you don't want it, that's fine. We got a lot of people and a lot of water quality we can improve in California with that $130 million.
And that's great. And I hope you'll consider, encourage people to use appropriate technology.
Thank you. We're moving on to Mr. Jack Corte Hunter. Can't quite make out the last name. My apologies. Beautiful script. Hard to make out.
Thank you. Good morning, still board. I so rarely hear my middle name. It threw me off completely. I'm Jack Hunter. I live in Los Osos. One thing that I heard you say was the environmental community didn't seem to be here today, and I'd like to point out that there are so many of us here who work as environmental professionals that I feel that the Sierra Club and other people who have come to the realization that we are better for the community of Los Osos than the former board, they would be here if they felt it necessary to be so. Los Osos has taken back its town. It's an unincorporated community. The county struggled with this issue for 20-some years. I myself have only in the last couple of years become aware of the fact that we're having terrible problems in Los Osos, just so I can read the list quickly. Los Osos, like so many other California communities, is producing nitrate-tainted water. It's just going into Morro Bay. There's no denying that. We have a plan to fix that problem much better than the Tri-W site design. We're in overdraft, maybe as much as 40% overdraft. The future of Los Osos, unless we get a solution which encompasses all the other problems, we have seawater intrusion, we have no sustainability going for us. This town will, this community will fail as a community if we don't get, Mr. Katz, your low-interest state loan to help us solve this problem. 90% of the people in Los Osos heard, and I want to point out to you, I don't know if you were able to receive this. I was unable to get copies to you until yesterday, but this is a DVD disc, or you did receive it, of the last meeting last week that concerns this issue. And I know that it will lay many of your fears. These people are on the ground. They're organized. They have plans. They understand the problems. They have solutions they're implementing. If you just take a few minutes, it doesn't take long. You don't have to spend your afternoon on this. Just take a few minutes, look at this DVD disc of this meeting, and you will see how serious we all are. 90% of the people who came to the podium that evening, and it is a very good cross-section of the community, people on all sides of the issue said basically that the proposal that Mr. Paul Hamas negotiated with our CSD board, they could live with that. And
no trouble. You'd be the first one that didn't have trouble with it. So
that's okay. People have trouble with my name, too.
I was going to ask, is it Dudok?
Dodok.
Dodok. Thank you very much. I emailed all of you.
Sir, if you would say your name for the record.
I'm sorry.
We mispronounced it.
Out of practice. James Tkach, Los Osos. Tkach. I emailed all of you back around the 4th and asked that this board work with the community to find an acceptable settlement to this situation. Yes, it's been going on 30 years. You gotta remember the CSD has only been around 7. The previous CSD, I believe in their heart, tried to bring a project to Los Osos. In fact, they did deliver a project. It's just the wrong project at the wrong place for the wrong price. I know that doesn't concern you, but I just ask that it, in some way it should, because as stewards of the public resources, if we could build something cheaper while continuing on the existing design of the collection and disposal system, which I have problems with myself with the disposal system, but I'm willing to overlook that and go forward while we look at an out-of-town location with the fallback position that we put a site on Tri-W if we're not able to achieve that goal. I think it's worthwhile because of, and I won't take up your time reiterating the reasons that the previous speakers had talked about, sustainability, trucking sludge to Santa Maria, even the Coastal Commission questioned that, whether that was a good idea. The water problem, the ag exchange, all those lead to beneficial use of water quality and protecting water quality. And that's why I took the time off. I'm a state employee. I took vacation to come up here today to address you, and I appreciate the opportunity. But I sincerely ask that if there was some way you could take the settlement, not settlement terms, but at least the negotiated terms that had been discussed with the community. And I, too, was surprised to see some of the proponents of the current project say that absolutely they could live with it. And if we could find something out of town cheaper, great. They're not married to Tri-W. They just want a project. And if you think you're sick of it, imagine us that live in the town. I mean, I've been holding off planting my drought-tolerant plants in the front yard, wanting to know when I'm going to install my lateral. I'm sincerely afraid that with the staff recommendation as proposed, you're painting the CSD into a corner that they can't get out of. And I think that's principally because of the site location. And I understand your not unwillingness to compromise on that aspect of the project and afraid of instituting a slippery slope, but I would ask again, seeing as that this problem has been around for so long, that maybe this is a time to look at making an exception for that. And I understand your frustration, but I don't want to be back here. You know, if this deal should fail, I don't want to be back here in 5 or 10 years, you know, asking again. You know, maybe you would reject us out of hand if we came back later on. And that's all I'm asking is that, as I understood it, we would continue. We've got the contractors there. They're chomping at the bit to go back to work. There's pipes sitting there in the sun, you know, with tarps over it. A lot of us were willing to overlook negotiation or discussions and to see if we could find something that is equitable to everybody. And, you emailed me back that said you look forward to a positive resolution. So does the community, and so do I. And I sincerely hope we can reach that accord. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Mr. Joe Sparks. At least that's one name I can pronounce.
Joe Sparks, Los Osos. Madam Chairman and the board members, I'm a homeowner within the Los Osos Prohibition Zone. I and three other citizens, we wrote ballot arguments against Measure B to the voters, and unfortunately, we were not successful. And I think some of the harmful effects of its passage are already evident. Your support and the state subsidy of a compliant project, they are greatly appreciated as engineers and lawyers and legislators. I know you recognize the benefits of continued support to the community and the project. And I urge you to take action to support a resolution and amend it as necessary to continue with funding support for our wastewater project. But also that will have the most expeditious effect to protect the groundwater and to minimize the burden of litigation and financial costs that ultimately are paid for by the homeowners and property owners in the district. I did support the negotiated proposal, and I want to thank Mr. Sacchetti for participating in those talks. And the reason I did support it is the following. I thought that it allowed the district to do its diligence for another site during the same period, which construction would otherwise be halted. Now, my preference, obviously, is to go and continue with a fully permitted project. Certainly, having the district do diligence on another site that could potentially, but not necessarily probably, save homeowners and partially the state $20 million to $30 million in present value of costs is not insignificant. I do have my doubts as to whether the district could succeed, given some of the comments that have made and in that short time frame, namely getting the commitments of amended permits from Coastal, the County of San Luis Obispo, agreements with property owners for sales, possibly with contingencies, as well as what they really need would be a negotiated agreement with residents affected by the site to avoid further litigation. We've already had within board meetings on this matter, residents near out-of-town sites say they're going to sue. So, I mean, what no matter what we do on any action, somebody's going to sue. That's Los Osos. There's two churches out of town, so it's. I think it is somewhat simplistic to think that you can just move the sewer. Mr. Measure B, you know, was people talked about it moving the sewer, but Measure B provided nothing specific to move the sewer, really. It had no specific site. It had no funding mechanism. It's just a restrictive ordinance that, unfortunately, you know, the proponents really minimized during the campaign. Mr. Baggett's gone, but he was concerned about precedents, and I know Measure B creates a precedence you guys don't like, but there's another precedent that you need to be concerned with, and that is that the homeowners have been very responsible. They approved the assessment bonds in 2001. They've been the most responsible party in this issue over the last 30 years. The one chance they had, they approved assessment funds. So you need to be careful in your action that you don't want to send a message to other districts and municipalities that will inhibit approval of assessments in response to unfunded mandates. It's not just the precedent that Measure B sets. There's also a precedent that when you have homeowners enter into an assessment to accomplish a solution to a problem that was mandated by the state, and now I didn't support the formation of the CSD in the first place. And for 9 years, we've had Coastal interfere twice. on this project. And the homeowners have just been getting jerked around, left and right, litigants, everybody. And you really need to take into consideration the interests of the homeowners that approved that assessment and their investment in 2001. And I think the negotiated proposal provided a protection for that. And I know it generates a risk to the state. That can't be denied. But I think the residents of Los Osos are going to recognize the Measure B, and I think it's in the board in the November 7th resolution resolved as part of the negotiated proposal to oppose it, to repeal it, to expedite the hearing. And we need to get that out of the way. I agree. So those are my comments in regard to your resolution. I guess I partially support it. I support the negotiated resolution because I want to see construction continue so we make forward progress that needs to be done. And the action of your resolution specific, I just don't see that happening. If you do amend it, there was comments made on pumping of septic tanks. I'd like you to also consider having some technical discussions between staff and the district staff engineering on maybe pumping septics pays for something immediately but has no long-term benefit. Within one of the contracts, the Whitaker contract, there's the construction of harvest wells that potentially can be used for lowering the groundwater levels. And so rather than pumping septic tanks, maybe you can consider, if you do part of the resolution, having an amendment for the district bearing costs. Maybe it can be associated with reducing the groundwater levels rather than pumping septic tanks. It's just something for consideration because the construction of those harvest wells long-term are going to reduce groundwater levels, and that does help to reduce the pollution to the bay. I'll finish up. I think this body has acted diligently and faithfully towards implementation of a compliant project with the district and homeowners, and I urge you to please consider to do so with consideration of the financial consequences to those who are legally obligated to pay for the project. That's the homeowners. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Richard Morgeson.
Richard Margetson. First thing I want to address is the comment that's been made. Last January, this board told speakers that came forward that if we had a problem with local government, change the local government. That's been done. So that was an excuse at that time. It's no longer an excuse. Mr. Katz talked about we had an opportunity as a grant program at one time. That was when it was in the county's hands. Los Osos has always been the stepchild of the county. They didn't have a whole lot to say. Part of this proposal today is pumping up septic tanks. I'm absolutely amazed. If you're so frustrated with this being a 30-year delayed project, why now all of a sudden you're interested in some measure in the community of reducing immediately the pollution of the bay, pollution of the groundwater? We have no water conservation program in the town of Los Osos. Los Osos currently, average household consumes 14 units of water. Adjoining towns, Morro Bay and Cambria, 6 and 5. That's absolutely absurd. I've always thought it's absurd, and I've pushed for water conservation in Los Osos. But I find it a little bit too late to now add this as a stipulation to this new agreement that puts extra restrictions on the community and makes it even harder for us to go forward with this project. Where was Regional Board 6 years ago? Stan Gustafson, one of the recalled board members, said he knew 5 years ago that we had saltwater intrusion. 5 years ago. Do you think water conservation may have stemmed some of the saltwater intrusion we're experiencing now, and now there's discussion of importation of water at some point down the road? We came to you in January. We asked you to possibly put a cap on the loan. We were blown away. $93 million, and actually your resolution, I think the number in the resolution, it says recommitment for $93 million. It actually wasn't a recommitment. It was a new commitment. The loan had actually expired, and I think the $93 million is a different figure. I think it's $93,100,000 and something. That, so there's two errors in this resolution if this is the one you're going to adopt. But you basically have a program that allows the contractors to increase the bids 50%. I think the biggest problem with that you face if this defaults is you're going to be looking at a total revamp of this program, because somebody higher up or at the federal level is going to get involved and go, you're allowing basically a bump of 50%, and our bids came in 46%. Is that a coincidence? You don't think the contractors knew? Los Osos is only trying to do what's best for the community, both environmentally and trying to save the economic viability of a community where more than 80% of the community work outside of the city boundaries or the town boundaries. Our business base is mostly mom-and-pop shops who are going to be devastated by the payment from the citizens leaving the community of almost $12 million a year, that none of that money comes back. What do you think happens to the bakery, the bookstore? They're trying to do what's best environmentally, but you have to allow them to try to save the economic viability of that community. This destroys that. OM&R down the road is going to continually increase at a higher rate than it would with a ponding system or whatever system outside of town with less personnel. You're looking at a difference between of 3 to 4 personnel compared to 11 that's scheduled now. Think of pay raises. Think of, anyway. 218 requirement. Was that a staff mistake or is that a program mistake? Now you're adding that stipulation to this new agreement that the community hold a 218 election. Why wasn't that done earlier? One last thing. Before you go back into discussion, it would be nice if there was, if the community could hear of the ex parte communications between the board members and the community.
Thank you. We have two remaining cards representing the Central Coast Regional Water Board, Mr. Phil Wiles and Ms. Lori Oker.
Good morning. I'm Lori Oken, and I'm here on behalf of Roger Briggs, who's the executive officer of the Central Coast Regional Board. The goal of regional board staff is to ensure that work resumes on this project and the project gets completed as timely as possible. As you've said before, the regional board didn't select the site, and your board didn't select the site, but this is the site the community has selected. And by way of background, there actually was a county project before this one that was outside of town, and the CSD was formed in part because of a community desire to move the project inside of town. Given that this is the project we have, our staff is firmly convinced that any efforts to move the project outside of town will cause an unacceptable delay, and it'll be far more than 2 years. The project will have to be repermitted, as has already been noted. Our WDRs have already been issued to the project. They are site-specific and technology-specific, so those would have to be reissued after CEQA was complied with. There would be other permits that would cause delays, likely litigation. We've already heard from neighbors of the new proposed site that they don't want a site near their homes that's built to treat waste that they don't even generate. In terms of whether the community could save money by moving the project, our staff has also concluded that they won't save money, that because of the redesign costs and the delay costs and potential litigation costs, that moving the site outside of town, even with a different type of technology, would very likely lead to a more expensive plant. There's also the issue of whether the district could find consultants that would be willing to bid on the new project and whether those consultants would charge a premium on their bids because of the controversy and financial uncertainty surrounding this project. So, therefore, the regional board staff does support the state board staff's recommendation to keep the loan alive because we think this is essential to get the project built. In terms of the new proposal that's been discussed today, I'd like to mention a couple of things. One is regarding Measure B. I was at the oral argument in the trial court regarding that measure, and the counsel for the proponents of Measure B stated that it wasn't just a siting ordinance, that it would also allow a reconsideration of the already approved technology for the existing treatment plant. The regional board has filed an amicus brief in the Court of Appeal on that litigation in support of invalidating Measure B, in support of the district's original position. There's a taxpayers group who's also filed an amicus brief, and that's scheduled to be heard on December 14th. Our concern, as yours, is that either the district will, even though the matter's been fully briefed, the district may show up and change their position at oral argument, or that they may enter a settlement agreement and dismiss the litigation or attempt to dismiss it, which we would oppose, before the Court of Appeal can hear it. Regarding the Prop 218 vote, I would urge you to draw on the long experience of the regional board with local issues to ensure that the vote is designed and the assessment area is designed in a manner that doesn't doom the vote to failure. And in particular, we would be concerned with any effort to increase the project service area, both because I think that extending the assessment to people who are not currently required to hook up would increase the opposition to the measure, and also would raise concerns about growth-inducing impacts of the project. And this has already been an issue for years, both in the community and at the Coastal Commission. Thank you for allowing us to speak this morning, and I can answer any questions. There have been some comments made that I don't know if you need answers to, but if you have questions about the project.
Ms. Oaken, since you have been involved in this for some time, I'm just curious, what would be your best guess if indeed the project were moved outside of town? What time frame would you envision?
Well, after consulting with the engineers who are working for the regional board, who collectively have over 40 years working on this project, they were saying at least 5 to 10 years, and at least one of them was skeptical that any project would ever be built if this loan is lost and this project doesn't go forward because of the potential for opposition and the potential future funding difficulties.
Thank you. Phil?
Thank you, Chair Doduk and board members. Phil Wiles, I'm representing the board, the Central Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board, as opposed to its staff. Just a couple of quick points, because there have been some, I think, some misunderstandings in the press and therefore probably with the public. The board members probably know this as well as anybody. My involvement is as counsel for the regional board in its upcoming enforcement hearing. And the executive officer has proposed a significant administrative civil liability fine against the district for violations of its time schedule order, and I am advising the board in that issue. I read in the local newspaper at least an implication that if there is to be a settlement between the state board and the district over the SRF loan, that would necessarily mean that the regional board would not be going forward with its hearing on December 1st to consider imposing a significant fine against the district. That is not the case. Any settlement that the state board reaches with the district over the loan would be over the loan. The regional board is still planning on conducting its hearing on December 1st. The board would, of course, be very interested to hear if there are any settlement developments and would take those into account. But the hearing is on track. It's currently scheduled, and I don't see anything changing that between now and December 1st.
One question for Phil. I mean, the reason I think that
the reason
that the idea of pumping out septics in a short term was put forward was to demonstrate a commitment and progress to moving forward by the community of Los Osos if there was this extraordinary action taken to try and do this phased in, give the consideration, et cetera, et cetera. Without getting into what's the purview of the regional board as opposed to the state board, I assume when you consider, when the regional board considers fines, positive actions to reduce effluent flowing into Morrow Bay would be something that you consider would be of interest when making determinations about if you're going to fine, what size the fines might be, and that kind of thing.
Absolutely. I'm quite certain that the board would be very interested in any efforts that the district is taking and would certainly take those into consideration in determining whether to issue a fine and the size of the fine. I also expect, frankly, that if there are major developments that the executive officer might revise his proposal to the board in terms of what the fine looks like and whether there are other aspects that the board should be considering.
Okay. Thank you, Phil.
Thank you.
If I may, Ms. Strauss, would you like to make a comment?
Good morning, board members. Alexis Strauss, director of the Water Division, US EPA. As you know, EPA, as board member Katz had mentioned, capitalizes the state revolving fund to the State Water Board and has done so since the inception of the program. I wanted to note that California's use rate in the SRF far exceeds national standards and is really a leader in our region. California's use rate in the SRF is at about 97% when you look at the cumulative funds circulating. As you know from a number of discussions held, there has never been a default nationwide in the SRF program. Although a number of states have had various issues to contend with, there was even a period when California had struggled with complying with the national SRF regs and very quickly addressed that and runs an excellent program. So I wanted to commend the board on how well the wastewater SRF program is running and to note really quite extensive funds are at play in doing this on an annual basis and feeling that there are certainly far more needs out there than even these funds can at this point address, as you know well. We have been involved at arm's length, given the relationship you have with the immediate lenders, but are happy to provide any further support that you may seek.
Thank you very much.
I have a follow-up question for staff. In listening to the comments today and in looking through the tremendous number of written comments that were submitted, The crux of this issue seems to be the siting, the location of the facility. And earlier today, Mr. Blesky, in his comments, referenced a Section 13 or something in the contract, which, according to his interpretation, allows for the move of the location. And I wanted to get staff's reaction to those comments, and specifically, what is the contract's prohibitions or specifications with respect to defining the location for this project?
I guess I would start just a little bit by a little bit of preface that the state revolving fund, before a project comes before the board, goes through several administrative steps that are prepared by your staff. Starting with starting with facilities plan approval, environmental document review, plan and spec approval, and then an approval to award. So there's numerous steps that we do before something comes before you, and I mention that because those are all project specific. In January 20th, 2005, before the board came a very specific project that had gone through all of those administrative approvals, and the scope approved by the board was premised upon those approvals. So our feeling is that
And the scope of the project includes the location of the facility.
Exactly. The whole concept is that the project it's a little bit complicated by the fact that Los Osos doesn't have an operating sanitation system now. And so we're building everything from scratch: collection system, treatment facility, disposal system. An SRF loan is repaid by a promise to complete those works and then to charge the appropriate user fee and repay the loan. And so taking one component out prevents the ability to complete the entire works and to charge the user fee, which is what the security of the loan is based on. It's a revenue pledge of the district to, one, complete the works as previously outlined, and then, two, to charge an appropriate rate to repay us at a later date. So I guess there's three. If the site was to be moved, it would take three kind of major items. First, we would have to go clearly back through all of the administrative approvals that staff do on all SRF loans. Two, it would have to come back to you for a new approval because it would be a different project, not previously approved by you. The scope was specific to the site and the entity. And then third, we would have to issue new loan contracts. We do not believe that Mr. Bleski's opinion that Section 3 allows for change. My staff counsel may wish to comment, but my understanding is that that basically is for minor modifications. Excising a treatment plant and moving it is kind of major.
Yeah, Section 13 of Exhibit A of the contract talks about notification. The district's supposed to notify us if anything significant happens. There's no reference to moving anything.
A couple things, I think, in terms of the motion that's before us. One is it should be modified to add the date of the responses due back by the close of business next Wednesday, which I believe is the 23rd. I'm sure someone has a calendar here.
Yeah, it's the 23rd.
Which, from what I've been told, should allow for at least 24 meetings by the Los Osos Community Services District to consider it. Second, Anne has some additional language just in terms of implementation that she'll submit. And if you could just hit the high points for the members, that would be helpful.
Yeah, we'd just be changing the therefore be it resolved language to add. We'd keep the continuation of if they go back to work on this project, then we'll stop the withholding. Or if they notify us by next Wednesday that they accept the phased approach put forth by Assemblymember Blakeslee requiring the immediate groundwater remediation and immediate filing of opposition to Measure B, and immediate securitization of a bond to cover amounts reimbursed through the SRF.
Okay. So I'll incorporate that as author's amendments into the resolution that's before us. And just a couple of comments. One is in response to whoever raised the ex parte question, because of the kind of measure that says there's no such thing as ex parte communications. I frankly haven't talked to anybody at the Community Services District or at the Regional Water Board for months about this, but I don't think any of this falls under the category of ex parte communications, and all communications would be appropriate. But in addition to that, I think people need to appreciate, and I'm sure that there's a different perspective from the Community Services District, that there are many people who believe that as soon as they stopped work on the project or passed Measure B, that we should have cut off the funds and given this loan to somebody else who wanted to build a plant and wants to move ahead, or the five or six communities that could spend that kind of money. The extraordinary measures that the board has taken to keep this loan open and available, hoping that Los Osos comes up with a rational plan for dealing with that. In the absence of I think, conclusive positive proof of moving forward, this resolution lays out a series of benchmarks that have to be met, or the money's going to go to someone else. There is 1 week to make a decision. We have an obligation to protect the state revolving loan fund and to clean up water and to protect water quality in the state of California. As much as I want to see water quality cleaned up in Los Osos, if the community there isn't willing to do it in a timely manner and on the conditions of this loan, they're free to go about however means they want on their own. We will go about, at least in my suggestion, we go about making sure that other communities that have projects that have been waiting in line patiently have a chance to spend this $130 million to clean up and improve water quality in their communities. That this is not a negotiating document, because there obviously seems to be some concern. Darren went down there at the direction of the board and the executive officer, Ed DeGeri, to try and add background information, to try and give guidance, to try and explain positions, and it's been misconstrued every time someone talks about it into a negotiating session. So I want to be really, really clear so there's no misunderstanding. The document that we're going to vote on shortly is a last, best, and final offer. It is not a negotiating document. It is not an opener. It is it. It is up to the Los Osos Community Services District to either accept it in total or not to accept it. That is your call, your decision, within your authority, and then you decide what you want to do after that. But if we don't have a positive response to this by close of business next Wednesday, then I would request that this be agendized for our December 9th meeting so that the money can go to one of the thousands, one of the hundreds of communities around California that will put this money to work immediately in cleaning up water quality.
First of all, let me second the motion by Member Katz and give you my reasons for that. I understand that there's a great division within the Los Osos community as to the siting of this particular plant. I'm not going to get into the benefits or demerits of one site versus the other site. My only concern is water quality at this point in time and how we can achieve that as rapidly as possible. Moving from the Tri-W site to a site out of town opens up Pandora's box, in my opinion. Pandora's box in the sense of you do not own the land, you, quote, have a willing seller, you have neighbors who have already indicated they might litigate, you do not have permits from the Coastal Commission or from the county, let alone permits from the Regional Water Board at this point in time. I think you are incredibly optimistic that you think that moving it out of town would only necessitate a delay of 2 years. I think Ms. Oken's estimate of 5 to 10 years may indeed be on the conservative side. I agree with Mr. Katz that this is a take-it-or-leave-it position that the State Water Board is taking. And indeed, we have spent an inordinate amount of time trying to work out something to save the loan for the community of Los Osos. It would have been very easy for us to simply walk away. But water quality was number one on our list. Secondly, we certainly did not want to default under the state revolving fund, and I hope it does not come to that. But we want to get the water cleaned up as quickly as possible, and moving the site at this point in time, I think, would amount to an inordinate delay. Ms. Doda?
Thank you. I will definitely concur with my colleague's concern regarding water quality. Ms. Schicker, thank you for all the comments and requests that you sent in. I have deliberately not responded to any of these inquiries because I wanted to approach this meeting today, listen to the comments with as much of an open perspective as possible. I have a great deal of sympathy for the position that you find yourself in and the challenge that you face in terms of addressing this issue. My question to Ms. Bohemus was aimed at addressing the one area where I thought maybe there was some room for us to maneuver, but it is clear that the contract as currently approved, as currently in place, does not allow for the moving of the location of the plant. And so, you know, speculations aside about how long they'll take and what the challenges will be, the challenge before us right now is the SRF loan is tied to a specific project, which is under a specific contract with a very specific scope. And I don't feel that we have the opportunity at this time that we should not weigh outside those specific parameters that have been put in place with respect to this particular loan. So I will need to join in my colleague in supporting the staff resolution.
I just have to ask one question about the proposal because it was brought up by public comment and myself. If item number one, if it is impossible for us to bond, if we are not able to do that as a Los Osos Community Service District, how could we even discuss the proposal any further? That's my only question.
I don't believe you know at this time whether you can or not. So there is an opportunity for the district to explore that matter and get back to us by Wednesday of next week, as already mentioned by Mr. Katz. So with that, we have a motion. We have a second. All in favor?
Aye.
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 The motion is passed. Thank you. At this time, we will adjourn to a closed session pursuant to Government Code Section 11126C3, and we will convene at 1:15. Michael.
Okay, now I understand. All right.
I'll even maintain that the standards in the basin plan of total nitrogen, total phosphorus, they're set on nationwide standards. And I maintain, the Marine Corps maintains, that they're not applicable to the Santa Margarita watershed, that it naturally cannot be achieved. I've been told by my technical people, and I'll defer the technical questions to them, that you can take drinking water, pour it over a rock in the Margarita, and it's going to come out higher than 1.1 for total nitrogen and phosphorus. To me, being a layperson and not a technical person, that just seems to me like it counterintuitive.
All right, let me try this again. Therefore, what you're really saying is that the background components themselves are not going to allow us to achieve the 1 and the 0.1 target levels.
Yes, sir.
I'd ask staff to respond to that. Greg or Stephen?
Yes, I'd like to respond to a couple of things that Captain Sieber mentioned. First of all, the applicability of these biostimulatory objectives, again, they've been in the basin plan since 1974. Rainbow Creek has been listed since 1998 on the 303D list. There's been ample opportunity to develop site-specific nitrogen objectives for anyone in the watershed who had been so interested in doing. That has not been done. Absent those, the basin plan recommends that the nitrogen objective be 10 times the phosphorus, which is set at 0.1. And these are, to the best of our knowledge right now, scientifically supportable by natural concentrations of these two nutrients that you find. There was another point that Captain Sieber made. I'd just like to mention that the best management practices, education outreach programs, I'm sure those are effective. Nitrogen concentrations did drop in the early 80s. They spiked again in 86, stayed that way through 1987. In 2000, dropped to 13, which is still way above the biostimulatory objective. And in 2004, they were back up to 41 again. So I think it's clear that something more than what's being done needs to be done. And this TMDL would provide the mechanism to do that. I think I've covered. Okay, thanks.
Sam, Richard?
Yep. Thank you. I also have a card from, I believe you mentioned your technical consultant, Mr. Reich.
Yes, ma'am.
Does he wish to speak?
Yes, he does, ma'am.
All right.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chairperson and Board. I appreciate the opportunity to come before you today. My name is Steve Reich. I'm a registered professional engineer in the state of California. I have over 15 years' experience working with hydrology and hydrogeology, and specifically in the Santa Margarita watershed since 1992. Most recently, I've been involved with characterization of the Santa Margarita River and its tributaries, including Rainbow Creek, for the purpose of doing identifying baseline hydrology, geomorphology, hydrogeology, and water quality issues. It's a huge system, as you know. It's a large watershed, and there's a lot of factors that contribute upon each other for the health of the overall system. My experience has included working with the San Diego State Santa Margarita Ecological Reserve and their scientists, with the Nature Conservancy, Mission Resource Conservation District, the Indian reservations, major wastewater purveyors, and other stakeholders in the watershed. I spend a lot of time looking at the different aspects that control the water quality in the basin. The Rainbow Creek TDML will effectively reduce conservation efforts that are taking place today to keep water in the basin. Because the TMDL effectively ignores water supply issues, choosing only to address the issues that deal directly with the water quality, long-term negative impacts could occur in the watershed. The relationship between the TMDL mandate water quality objectives and post-development flows have not been completely explored in the document that's before you today. For example, the TMDL has not looked at the cumulative long-term impacts to the entire watershed due to degradation caused by other constituents that may be present in the surface water runoff. Some of the topics that I'd like to address specifically, I'm going to go through fairly quickly, and that is the confusion in the document itself between the numeric limits for nitrate as nitrogen and total nitrogen that are throughout the document itself. And for example, confusing the standard for municipal water supply with that for biostimulatory elements. It's confusing to the layperson. Certainly it's confusing to me how meeting a stepwise objectives of 10 milligrams nitrogen or nitrate as nitrogen by 2009 for municipal purposes and later trying to achieve the biostimulatory standards by 2021. The TMDL does not address the changes in the flow regime that could likely take place in order to achieve the reductions that have been stipulated in the TMDL itself. The TMDL does not address the overall impact to other constituents in the surface water due to urbanization. The cumulative effects of reducing the low and medium base loads in the creek could have effects downstream later on as future flow regimes are realized. My work in other portions of the Santa Margarita Basin, and that includes the major wastewater purveyors in the Temecula-Murrieta area, has shown that downstream negative impacts to water quality do occur when dilution from urban runoff areas is not present. Going forward, the TMDL has not adequately addressed the relationship between water supply and water quality, the proper summative capacity of the habitat, and other fluxes that really control the health of the system itself. The TMDL does not address specific best management practices that will result in maintaining the historical flows that I've been talking about in terms of avoiding reduction in the future flows. The TMDL recommends the use of groundwater studies to substantiate background values that are used to set numerical loading limits. It is curious to me that these studies are not being conducted prior to going forward or prior to adopting the TMDL itself. While other experts have provided detailed comments addressing the TMDL, the flow regime and its relationship to the Santa Margarita River and downstream water bodies has not been closely examined. The 2021 target reduction of almost 70% nutrient reduction from land allocation sources could likely come at a cost of reduced surface flows in the watershed and other downstream water courses. The implementation action plan, I'd like to kind of close with that, in the TMDL would benefit from offering an effluent trading program option such as North Carolina's TAR Pemlico Nutrient Reduction Trading Program. An effluent trading program provides flexibility in the allocation of pollution control responsibilities to achieve water quality goals in a cost-effective manner. Lastly, I'd like to just caution you about adopting the TMDL at this time without further investigation. If you so choose, I'd like to submit a written comments if that's appropriate. But thank you for your time.
Thank you. I believe the deadline for written comments have been passed. Mr. Joe Jackson.
Thank you for an opportunity to appear before you again. My name is Joe Jackson. I'm the chief engineer of the Fallbrook Public Utility District. When I spoke at the workshop earlier this month, I raised several issues in opposition to the adoption of this TMDL, and I'd like to reiterate them briefly. First, the staff's contention that these goals have been in the basin plan since 1974, that's simply incorrect. The numerical basin plan goals relied on in this TMDL development are unattainable, and they're incorrectly identified in Table 4A of the TMDL as water quality objectives of one part nitrogen and one-tenth part phosphorus. Those numbers are identified in the basin plan at page 3-6 under the biostimulatory substances objective as merely, quote, a desired goal in order to prevent plant nuisance in streams and other flowing waters, end quote. The basin plan objective clearly is that waters not contain biostimulatory substances in concentrations that promote nuisance aquatic growth. The TMDL and
Mr. Jackson, I need to interrupt you. I have your written statement in front of me. It seems like you are reading from that statement, which we've read, and the information that you've provided here is information that you provided when we had the workshop 2 weeks ago. And I believe these items have been mentioned today as well and also addressed by staff. Was there anything new that you wanted to bring to the board's attention?
Yes, Madam Chairman, then I'll depart from my written comments. And my personal experience is that any stream in the Santa Margarita drainage that I am aware of has background limits, background nutrient levels higher than 1.1. My personal experience is to hike every weekend in the winter in the Agua Tibia Wilderness, drained by Seco Creek. If I had taken my camera up there this spring, I could have shown you creeks in the wilderness area that look that have algal blooms identical to those contained in the PowerPoint presentation that you also did not look at. And I'd close with saying, why is the basin plan limits in the Santa Ana River, why are the basin plan limits in the Santa Ana River of 10 and 2 not contributory and are supportive of beneficial uses? Well, 20 miles to the south in the Santa Margarita, we're saddled with 1 and 0.1. What this does is this simply diverts flows from the Santa Margarita River to the detriment of the system to the Santa Ana Basin. I'm sure the folks in Orange County appreciate that. In San Diego County, we would like to know why those flows, which normally would come down the Santa Margarita River, are diverted to Orange County. Thank you for your time.
May I respond to three
Please.
Points? First of all, Mr. Jackson is correct. I misspoke. The biostimulatory objectives have been in the basin plan since 1994, which was the last update. Second of all, background levels that Regional Board has been able to ascertain from their own studies, 0.47 for nitrogen, 0.07 for phosphorus, both of which are below the objectives. U.S. Geological Survey determined 0.26 for nitrogen, 0.02 for phosphorus. And again, as I mentioned earlier, U.S. EPA recommends, recommends background levels of 0.5 and 0.03, all of which are less than the basin plan objectives.
Right.
And lastly, the point about the 10 and 2 in the Santa Ana River, I'm not familiar with that, but I'm assuming that those are site-specific objectives. And if so, again, as we've mentioned, those can well be developed over the implementation plan period of this TNBL and could have been started years ago when this was first listed. If those turn out to be more accurate and more scientifically credible, then there's nothing that says this TNBL cannot be fixed later on to accommodate those objectives if that is in fact the scientific truth.
Thank you. Mr. Richard Watson. Welcome back. You've also appeared before us on this matter at the workshop.
Yes.
I again ask you to limit your comments to any new information you wanted to provide to the board.
Thank you, Chair Doduck and members. I want to respond to some comments that were made last time or explain that a little bit and elaborate on a couple points I made last time and make a recommendation I did not make last time, if I may. First slide, please. Oh, I have that. Is it to the right? The wheel? Okay. Basically, one of the things I would disagree with the staff on is that we've had these numbers in there and we could have requested a site-specific objective. From the regulated community's point of view, when there's a narrative objective and examples that say underneath that a desired goal in order to prevent plant nuisance in streams, et cetera, appears to be, that doesn't appear to be to us to be a water quality objective. And we're not even sure that those goals are correct. There's actually no evidence that the beneficial uses are being impaired, and we are attaining the water quality, the narrative objective, and then we're getting close, actually, on the desired numeric goals. Rainbow Creek really, I think, should have been delisted in 2002, and that's what I wanted to talk about. Last time, issue was raised, how did this come to this point? Remind you that the purpose of the 303D list is to identify water bodies that are not able to meet water quality standards based on available controls. And as we discussed last time and the staff report discusses, between 1986 and 1999, there was, in fact, a 96% reduction in nitrates. And Rainbow Creek was well on its way, actually, to meeting water quality standards with available pollution controls. Then during that period, or toward the end of it, actually after it in terms of closing, a new owner came in for the nursery, that's Hines Horticulture, committed to developing a new recycling system to replace the system that was designed with a 319H grant that made use of the creek. Then what happened earlier, actually I think it was in 2002, there was a previous TMDL, and that TMDL was for eutrophication. That TMDL was...
Mr. Watson, the fact remains is that this Rainbow Creek is on the current 303D
it
list.
Is.
And my understanding is it's still on the list in the draft version that's being considered by the board or will be considered by the board early next year. So I would encourage you to move on to your next issue.
Okay. If I can do that here. I just wanted to relay the points about the what was done, what was in the creek, is no longer in the creek. It's been redesigned, and it was delayed a little bit for various reasons, particularly county processing, and a little bit on redesign to get it 100% coverage. As of yesterday, the Hines system is working. They're going through the sort of shakedown crews right now, but the creek bed is no longer being used as a tailwater recovery system, and the Hines Horticulture Fallbrook system is virtually 100% covered. And as I mentioned last time, they spent about $2.7 million. Some concerns that those of us in the regulated community have is how we get into this, because as staff has said before, the TMDLs are not self-implementing. And you have to do things like incorporating load allocations into WDRs, conditional waivers, permits, et cetera. We don't think that this is that these enforceable implementation measures are appropriate when there's no actual evidence of impairments and the TMDL is actually based on desired goals. One of the things I'd like to reiterate is just the importance of addressing atmospheric deposition. We talked about that some last time. This TMDL only addresses direct atmospheric deposition of the creek, and a lot of research has indicated indirect is probably the most important. I can't remember if I used any numbers last time or not, but I corrected them. Using the numbers in the regional board staff report or technical report, you'd get something from atmospheric deposition using EPA rates. You'd get something like 28,630 kilograms of nitrogen a year and 1,718 kilograms of phosphorus. I deducted the part that goes into the creek. We don't know how much of that actually runs off into the water, but obviously some does, and quite a bit probably. We think that you could actually somehow transform this into a model TMDL for addressing atmospheric deposition in relationship to nutrients. It's a small watershed. Staff's already pointed that out. They've done a lot of work. EPA has put money into it and has really been pressing to get the thing done. The San Diego Regional Board actually has a working relationship with SQRP that's done work in this area. We think they could work with the Air Quality Management District down there to get some current data. Lastly, you have authority to adopt and implement good regulatory controls. Most of us just don't think this is it. We think you could help it by remanding it and with some direction to include indirect deposition and delay the biostimulatory substances until you adopt the new numbers. Thank you.
Thank you. And our last speaker on this item is Mr. Eric Larson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the board. I'm Eric Larson, Executive Director of the San Diego County Farm Bureau. I did speak to you at the workshop, and the comment I made at that time is that a site-specific objective should be set for Rainbow Creek because of the lack of detailed information. I must report that it was disturbing to hear comments at that workshop on November the 2nd that the reason there is no site-specific objective for Rainbow Creek is that there's a lack of funding to do the work. We heard that during the workshop. You also heard here today twice from staff that there has been plenty of time to do that work. It just hasn't been done. It almost sounded like the responsibility was laying on the regulated community to set that standard. So as a substitute for that lack of a site-specific objective, this TMDL sets in motion remedies that will cost the public and public agencies $12 to $28 million. Now, that amount of money may seem small in the context of protecting the waters of California, but Rainbow Creek is small, just 7,000 acres. 65% is undeveloped, placing the cost of this TMDL on just 2,400 acres of homes, farms, and public facilities. So the real cost is approximately $5,000 to $11,000 per acre to meet objectives that may, in fact, be unachievable from the testimony you heard last week and today. If there's ever an example of regulatory shifting of responsibility, it's here before you today. The farm community understands the need for clean water and the need to protect Rainbow Creek. It's clear work needs to be done, and the farmers are working towards those remedies. But if the end result is poor public policy with no regard for the burden placed on the regulated community and achievable and finding achievable objectives, then doubt will be cast on the entire course of action. We also heard on the 2nd that Rainbow Creek TMDL had reached this point well ahead of more impaired water bodies because it was, and I quote, the low-hanging fruit. Again, all I can say is this is nothing short of poor public policy and will strike at the credibility of the TMDL process. Now, in defense of the San Diego Regional Water Quality Control Board and the staff, it is my opinion that they were pressured and left with few options. You can correct that wrong. I ask you to question what is being bought with this large investment of public and private funds. In the text of the TMDL, you read that strides have been made in Rainbow Creek to improve the water quality, and that work is continuing today. Please help halt this step towards bad public policy. You can protect the integrity of the TMDL process by remanding the Rainbow Creek TMDL back to the regional board for realistic and attainable objectives. Thank you.
Thank you. That was our last speaker card. Any closing comments by the regional board or state board representatives? Staff. Mr. Carlisle?
Thank you. Just briefly, some closing comments. The regional board has been and continues to be receptive to and consider any information or data that the stakeholders wish to submit in support of a different water quality objective. However, there is plenty of time to make future modifications during the 19 years of implementation, and we specifically have formulas in the Basin Plan Amendment to immediately recalculate the TMDL margin of safety allocations and reductions if the water quality standard changes. And just lastly, good scientific methods have been applied throughout this process. However, good science does not mean no uncertainty. Scientific certainty is not needed prior to adoption of a TMDL. As a matter of fact, it's not possible in a lot of what we do in such a complex system, as Mr. Wright pointed out. Our calculations have been developed and fine-tuned over 5 years, reviewed twice by University of California professors, reviewed twice by the US EPA, and as I said, we already have an adaptive implementation should more data become available. Thank you, and I'm available if you have any more questions.
No, thank you for those closing comments. Any questions, comments?
I guess I have three comments. One, the gentleman just finished saying, which is this TMDL will stretch over a period of 19 years, and there's ample opportunity to amend it over those years if indeed we find a different scientific basis or new evidence. Secondly, the fact that it's low-hanging fruit does not obviate us from the necessity of doing TMDLs. If I could wave a magic wand, perhaps I would have started with TMDLs that achieve the greatest impact in terms of water quality. But there's nothing inappropriate with going after the low-hanging fruit either. If indeed we have an impaired water body, we have an impaired water body, and nothing wrong with that particular TMDL. And then finally, as far as doing site-specific targets, if you like, yes, there is a resource deficit, and that's simply something that we have to live with. But again, the standards that we are setting for this particular watershed are half of those of US EPA. So in that sense, I don't think we are being too egregious in putting forth these targets.
Would you like to make a motion?
I would move that we adopt this TMDL.
No objection?
No vote. I'm not voting on it yet. I'm abstaining right now. I understand. No, you have a quorum. You don't have a majority. But just leave it where it is for now.
We're going to leave this matter on the record for now and move on to items 11 and 12. I'm going to ask staff to present both items at the same time for our consideration.
Madam Chair, just so I can clarify for the record, you're leaving it open for today or you're tabling it to a subsequent board meeting?
We're leaving it open for today.
Okay. If I may indulge while we transition staff here, I just want to point out for the board members that you're about to see in the presentation of these final two TMDLs today, Mike Levy make his final appearance before the board as a TMDL attorney for the State Water Resources Control Board. He is in the process of transitioning to represent the Los Angeles Regional Board. But I just want to thank and compliment Mike for the incredible job he's done over the last 4 or 5 years as the State Water Board's chief TMDL attorney, providing guidance not only to you as the board and to your staff, but also providing guidance to the TMDL roundtable for all of the regional boards. He's been an invaluable asset as TMDL has become the highest priority for the State Water Resources Control Board and its mission statement during that time. And he's really just done an incredible job for all of us, and we appreciate his work.
And his reward was to send him to Region 4?
Well, no. I was going to say something.
Next time, don't try so hard, Mike.
I was going to say something a little bit differently. It is the reward of Region 4 to receive Mr. Levy. So,
I appreciate the sentiment in whatever vein they were offered.
Madam Chair, thank you for allowing us to bring these together since there are many stakeholders that are interested in both of the TMDLs. You asked for us to limit it to the issues raised. During the October board meeting, this item never actually was opened. It was continued without being opened. However, in the comment letters and comments from workshop, there are several. The first is that the TMDL should not be adopted because the water San Joaquin River should be delisted from the 303D list. It is right now on the 303D list from the Mendota Dam to Vernalis. It is on the proposed list from Mendota Dam to Vernalis. The commenter was suggesting that because the water quality salinity objectives at Vernalis are met as a result of the diluting flows from the New Melones Dam, the whole of the segment should be delisted. Staff finds that would be an inappropriate reason for not approving the TMDL. The TMDL addresses the entire segment from the Mendota Dam to Vernalis. It addresses the impairment for agriculture, and adoption of the TMDL is appropriate under Section 303D. One of the second issues that was raised is that the source of the problem here for the salinity is the supply water. In the TMDL, it very specifically allows supply water allocations, credits for diluting flows, and salt concentration. And also credits for the salt concentration in the supply water. These are all directed towards reducing and acknowledging the concentration of salt in the supply water. Part of that issue also then, many people indicated that since the supply water comes from the Bureau of Reclamation, that the Bureau of Reclamation should be wholly responsible. The Bureau has indicated that they do not feel that they are liable for actions of their customers. However, the Bureau of Reclamation is responsible for the water quality that it delivers to its customers, and it is responsible for ensuring that the contracts with its customers, that the water is used in places and for purposes authorized through their water rights permits. If the Bureau's customers discharge salts as a result of the quality of the water that is provided to them, then it is the Bureau's responsibility to provide for drainage. So staff could not support that contention either. A fourth item that was concerned, it was suggested that the State Board should wait to adopt this TMDL or approve the TMDL until your process for reviewing
the Bay Delta salinity standards was completed. The real-time allocations that are included in the TMDL are based upon a formula. They are not tied to specific water quality objectives. Rather, those load allocations are a function of the objective. So if the State Board chooses to modify the salinity objective as a result of the periodic review of the Bay Delta plan, then the real-time load allocations will still continue to be appropriate for achieving the objective, whatever objective is set. A fourth item that was raised is that there is a conflict between the salt boron TMDL and the dissolved oxygen TMDL for the Stockton Deepwater Ship Channel. That one will be addressed in a few moments. I would like to indicate also that at the October board meeting, during discussion of the dissolved oxygen objective, Mr. Tim O'Loughlin, representing the San Joaquin River Group Authority, requested to submit a compact disc with what he said was important information regarding the salt boron TMDL and the dissolved oxygen TMDL, and that the board delayed consideration of these two TMDLs based upon that request. After review of the CD, there was no new information on it relative to this TMDL, and in fact, what it contained was primarily documents relating to his petition to delist the San Joaquin River from the 303D list at Vernalis, and also documents relating to the State Board's periodic review of the Bay Delta plan. At this time, I'd like to turn it over to Joanna for the DO.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the board. For the record, my name is Joanna Jensen with the Division of Water Quality. Item number 11 on the agenda is a basin plan amendment that addresses dissolved oxygen impairments in the Stockton Deepwater Ship Channel. And let me show you where the impairments are. Oh, right there. And let me give you a closer look at the area. This shows the red area shows where the dissolved oxygen impairments are. And notice here that the flow splits at the head of Old River, where the water is diverted down to the exports. The numeric target for this TMDL are the existing dissolved oxygen water quality objectives for protection of aquatic life, particularly for protection of the Chinook salmon that needs to swim through the ship channel to spawn upstream. The Central Valley Regional Board has identifies three factors as the cause of the dissolved oxygen impairment. Those factors are loads of oxygen-demanding substances from upstream sources, this area, that removes oxygen from the water column, and the geometry of the ship channel itself. It's been dug out, so it's deeper than the river upstream. As well as reduced flow through the channel, which increases the residence time. This basin plan amendment assigns full responsibility and control measures to each of these three factors. The amendment has been likened to a three-legged stool, in that you need all three legs of the stool for the stool to function. Likewise, this amendment, in order to improve the situation in the ship channel, will need all three control factors. The control program includes a TMDL, which assigns a waste load allocation for the City of Stockton Regional Wastewater Control Facility, load allocations for non-point discharges, and a reserve for unknown and minor sources. A conditional prohibition of discharge of oxygen-demanding substances and their precursors will take effect on December 31st, 2011, whenever net daily flow in the ship channel is less than 3,000 feet per second, and if the targets are not met, the prohibition will be reconsidered in 2009 based on study results. The prohibitions do not apply if the discharge is regulated by a waiver, waste discharge requirements, or an NPDES permit, which implement the TMDL. The amendment also requires the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to perform studies and request that the impacts of the existing geometry of the ship channel be reduced. In addition, the State Water Board is requested to consider amending existing water rights permits that reduce flow through the ship channel and also require evaluation and full mitigation of the potential impacts of future water right permits. Agencies responsible for existing and future water resources facilities that potentially could reduce the flow through the ship channel should be evaluated and the impacts reduced in accordance with the amendment. To this date, the State Board has received 11 comment letters on this amendment, which including the CD that was submitted at last month's meeting. Most of these comments have been submitted previously for the Regional Board's consideration and is therefore already in the record. At last month's meeting on October 20th, several concerns was raised by the public and the State Board members. These revolved around two issues. One question that was raised was whether more responsibility could be and should be assigned to the Army Corps of Engineers and the Port of Stockton for mitigating impacts due to channel geometry. Another concern expressed was that there was potential interactions and conflict between the salt and boron TMDL and the dissolved oxygen TMDL. And the State Board members instructed staff to address these issues today. And with that, I'd like to introduce Michael Levy, a legal counsel, who will address the issue of assigning responsibility to the Corps of Engineers and the Port of Stockton.
Good afternoon. For the record, I'm Senior Staff Counsel Michael Levy. With respect to the first issue that Ms. Jensen raised, there was much comment last time about whether or not the Corps of Engineers and the responsibility for the geometry of the channel has been adequately considered in the TMDL. The fact of the matter is it has. The Basin Plan Amendment language clearly and squarely places 100% of the responsibility of dealing with the impairment on the channel geometry, just as it places 100% of the responsibility on the flow issues under the control of the Bureau of Reclamation, and likewise 100% on the discharges of the oxygen-demanding substances. The TMDL and the Basin Plan Amendment specifically direct staff to use the Water Board's 401 certification authority to address channel geometry issues that are contributing to violations of water quality standards and the inability to meet beneficial uses and the dissolved oxygen objectives. As you know, the 401 certification authority coming from Section 401 of the Federal Clean Water Act is the state or the regional board's authority to essentially veto or condition federal dredging and other discharge permits from the federal government. And the regional board has, in fact, already placed conditions on maintenance dredging 401 certifications, and in light of the TMDL, when their next maintenance dredging certification comes forward, they will be looking at it with a lot more scrutiny based upon the language of the TMDL. So that's squarely within there. With respect to the conflict or alleged conflict,
I understand that the State Board staff presentation is done, so I'll go ahead and address that specific issue as well as the rest of my comments, which are quite short. I do want to emphasize that we have also reviewed the CD that Mr. O'Loughlin presented. It's the same type of information that we have used all along in developing the TMDL. Some of the work may be very helpful in terms of implementation, but it does not fundamentally change our understanding of the water quality problems in the San Joaquin or the
or the types of solutions that are on the table. And could I have the map back up again, please? The other issue is, that'll do. The other issue is the potential of conflict between the two TMDLs. The concern is that as we try to control the salt discharges in the San Joaquin, and we'll see if this is going to come up with the. Oh, well. You saw the red area earlier from Mendota Dam to Vernalis. That is the section that we're dealing with on the with the salinity control effort. Certainly anything we do in that stretch of the river that changes the volume of flow or the timing of the flow will affect the flows at Vernalis in the San Joaquin River. But looking at the more detailed map of the delta here and the location of the red area for the dissolved oxygen impairment, as the San Joaquin River flows into the delta, it is not a single channel. It spreads out into three major channels are shown here, but there are many interconnected channels. If this was just left to run on as a natural body of water or bodies of water, as the flows at Vernalis increased or decreased proportionately, the flows in the San Joaquin River past Stockton would go up and down. But the reality is we have rather severely intervened with modifications of the delta. You saw earlier the pumps at Tracy and a lot of the flow in the San Joaquin River turns and heads over that direction, not going past Stockton. To offset the various impacts of that pumping, the head of Old River Barrier and other barriers are installed periodically in the delta. So any impact that may occur on flows coming into the delta from salinity controls are going to be dwarfed to total insignificance compared to the other flow changes in the delta. The second reason we don't think that there's a conflict is if you change the flow by, say, you remove some volume from the river, a saline salt source, you're removing volume of water, you're removing salt, but there's also oxygen demand, nutrients associated with that water. You just don't have a pure sodium chloride solution. So you're reducing the flow going into the Stockton area, but you would also be reducing the amount of oxygen-demanding substances. So there should be, if there's less flow, there should also be less oxygen demand to drive the dissolved oxygen down. For these two reasons, the fact that, first off, we don't think that the flow, any change.
Good afternoon again, Chair Dodick and Board Member Secundi. Alexis Strauss, on behalf of the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, addressing both the Stockton Ship Channel DO TMDL and the San Joaquin River Salinity and Boron TMDLs, I want to just very briefly reiterate EPA's support for these, which meet all Federal Clean Water Act requirements, and I think identify a reasonable adaptive management framework to begin addressing these impairments. Some recent commenters had argued that the DO TMDL was inconsistent with the salinity and boron TMDLs with respect to flow, and we believe that the TMDLs will, to the contrary, actually reinforce one another as we try to repair these vital systems. For example, the actions to control upstream sources will help reduce key nutrient loading sources that contribute to the DO problem in the ship channel. And in addition to the source controls, the DO TMDL specifically provides for the use of alternative measures such as aeration to help address this problem. The TMDL does not mandate flow mod as a solution. Secondly, to the extent that the DO TMDL implementation plan addresses the flow regime, it focuses on diversions to the state and federal water projects at Old River, not on upstream flow sources that are principally at issue in the salinity and boron TMDLs. We see no persuasive arguments that implementation of these TMDLs would undercut one another. So, in conclusion, I urge your consideration and adoption of these. I believe they provide a great deal of flexibility in the implementation period for the affected parties to best determine how to shape the actions to follow. Thank you.
Thank you. There are several speakers that submitted cards for both 11 and 12, and I'll get to them later. Oh, there are more. Okay. Okay. There are some speakers that submitted cards for just one item. Mr. John Davis on item number 12.
Madam Chair, my name is John Davis. I'm the Deputy Regional Director for the Bureau of Reclamation here in Sacramento. I know that we provided written comments for the record for your consideration twice in October, so I'm going to try and deviate a little bit from my proposed speech just for the sake of time and reiterate a couple points that we've heard today. The Bureau of Reclamation is a water delivery system, not a discharger. The DMC does not adulterate the water from its source to its destination. And I've heard today from staff that that the Bureau should be, because of the salt of the water, or the EC, the water we get out of the Delta, we should be held accountable in some degree. Well, that puts us in a position of not just being a water purveyor, but we're going to have to treat the water. Well, it limits our options. Either we're going to treat the water at Tracy, we're not going to pump at Tracy during the times that is a problem, or we have to mitigate. And those are real awkward positions for a water purveyor to be put in. Unit. We have put provisions in those contracts that say that those contractors are responsible for all state and federal water quality standards. For surface and subsurface agricultural drainage discharges. And if they don't meet those standards, they're in breach of contract and they put their future contract in jeopardy. So I think we are taking some actions. But as a water purveyor, we're very concerned that we're being assigned being treated as a discharger. That just concludes my comments for the sake of record.
I'd like Mr. Levy to respond to that last point. Has this ever been done before, Mr. Levy?
Well, that's a complex question. I believe it was 1989, the regional board did impose or file or issue waste discharge requirements on the Bureau of Reclamation, and the matter was petitioned up here, and the result of that process was that its water rights permit was modified to protect in-stream beneficial uses instead of waste discharge requirements being issued by the regional board. And it went back to the regional board, and they issued a waiver of waste discharge requirements, which required essentially that they comply with their water rights conditions. I want to note for the record that this TMDL does not impose waste discharge requirements on the Bureau. It requires a report of waste discharge if a memorandum of agreement is not reached on how to address the impairment that's caused from the source of water that the Bureau is choosing to put at different times in different places. The result of the request for a report of waste discharge and the filing of the report is a matter for another day. It may well be that at that time, if we get to that point, and hopefully we don't get there because hopefully the regional board and the Bureau work cooperatively to address the problem in a constructive way, but if we get to that point, then there will be a proper petition process. If the regional board does something and this board, the state board, will have the opportunity to weigh in on whether they acted appropriately or whether or not it should come up here as a matter of the water rights permit again. But that's not in this TMDL. It's just holding them basically responsible for the discharge that they're causing. And now let me address that point. The Central Valley Improvement, the Central Valley Project Improvement Act, which has been cited in the comments by the Bureau, Public Law 102-575, expressly requires the Bureau to make the contractors responsible for the water quality discharges that from their contracts. However, in Section 3411B of that same statute, the law provides that, let me read it to you here, the Bureau shall take no action which shifts an obligation that otherwise should be borne by the Central Valley Project to any other lawful water right permittee or licensee. Now, what the regional board is asserting is there is a degree of control that the Bureau of Reclamation has in deciding which water to release at which times. And it could just as easily, or not just as easily, but feasibly, could release
water from, instead of from the Delta Mendota Canal, which is high salinity water, could release some cleaner, low salinity Friant Dam water as well. And those are issues that remain to be discussed in the Memorandum of Understanding. The final point I want to make is that the Bureau of Reclamation is, in fact,
we're pumping water at Tracy. We don't have a choice what's coming down. And I understand, like I said earlier, we have three things we can do. We can treat it at Tracy. We can refuse to pump it and not provide the water to our contractors because of salinity. Or we can pump it, provide it, and worry about mitigation, worry about flows later. I think this is going to set a precedent. I wonder how this is going to affect the state water project and the water they deliver to the Kern County Water Agency and the member units, how they're going to be responsible. What about in the L.A. area and the San Diego area? Because that's all state water project water. And they're a purveyor, too. Well, in closing, I want to thank you for the opportunity to provide some comments.
Thank you, Mr. Davis.
May I briefly add one more point in rebuttal? Is that we've seen this issue before, particularly in the Region 4 Santa Clara River TMDL, where there's high salinity water that's coming down from the Central Valley Project. And it really is, at some point, of course, the Central Valley Project is responsible for where they're putting water. And it's also the dischargers are responsible for where they're putting water as well. And at some point, it's going to be up to this board to decide when it's appropriate to recognize that our water quality impairments in large measure are both based on pollutants and flow issues. And this TMDL, I guess, for pretty much the first time, is raising squarely the issue of do we look at both flow and pollutant discharges when we're trying to address these water bodies in massively altered hydrologic regimes.
Mr. Grober, I saw you standing up. Did you wish to respond?
Yes, my name is Les Grober with the Regional Water Quality Control Board. I just wanted to add the element here that puts the responsibility on the Bureau for their contribution to the impairment. The item actually contains a couple of points in ways that they can meet that responsibility. And first is to meet the DMC load allocations, and that would be somehow improving the supply. But there's a Part B that says provide mitigation and or dilution flows to create additional assimilative capacity in the lower San Joaquin River equivalent to the DMC salt loads. So that means, in effect, they can do it in part through what they have already been doing through releases, say, from New Melones, and also by providing drainage or removal of salt in drainage water.
Thank you. Dr. James Coughlin? And you're speaking on item 12 only.
Could I have that first slide, please? Good afternoon, Madam Chair and board members. My name is Dr. James Coughlin. I'm an independent consultant in environmental chemistry and food chemistry and toxicology from Orange County, California. I'm here today on behalf of the U.S. Borax Company, U.S. Borax Incorporated, a company that's been doing business in California for over 130 years. I'm going to address only comments on the boron portion of this this activity. I've been consulting with Borax for almost 14 years now on a wide range of issues, and I appreciate the opportunity to come before you today. This is a brief outline of the presentation. Let's jump down to the second part of it. After I give you one quick slide on some key facts about boron, the first bullet is the most important message I want to bring to you today, that EPA has the World Health Organization in 1996, headquartered in Geneva, declared that boron is a probable human nutrient, and they did a two-year study. The daily diet of most Americans on average contains about a milligram of boron per day from a wide range of foods and beverages. By far, the fruits, vegetables, nuts, legume categories, all healthy foods, contain the most boron, and a lot of nutritionists consider that the level of boron in a product like that is a marker for a healthy diet. There's been many years of activity on doing risk assessments on boron's toxicity done by federal EPA, the U.S. National Academy of Sciences, the World Health Organization, as I mentioned, and also the European Union. a rather busy slide, but the key point here that I saw that was an error in the background documents coming out of the Central Valley region. Federal EPA, after 10 years of study and a very wide range of external and internal peer review, significantly raised the reference dose for boron in a published document in August 2004. That 122% is actually more than a doubling of the acceptable daily intake. Now, by definition, I have it there. An RFD is EPA's definition of a chemical's daily intake from all possible sources, whether it's air, water, diet, you name it, that is estimated to pose no increased risk to humans over a lifetime. The old RFD, the previous RFD, was established way back in 1988, and we just EPA did their calculations. 6.3 milligrams of boron per day was the reference dose for adult males and a little less for adult females because they have a lower body weight. This new RFD that was established just a little over a year ago raises the acceptable level of daily boron intake to a total of 14 milligrams of B per day for adult males and 12 for adult females. Now, this is significant. Federal EPA was very proud of this work they did over the 10-year period. It's the first reference dose. They claimed when they released it that they actually used scientifically based data-derived uncertainty factors to come up with the acceptable intake level instead of using default safety factors. Since this is a recent change in the reference dose, federal EPA has not revised any of the regulatory levels that in drinking water or anything else since this was established back in August 04. This is a tricky, there we go. Here's a slide briefly describing to you what we now know about the nutritional essentiality of boron. I've led a program for US Borax over the past 10 years to try to establish the essentiality of boron as a essential mineral. Not my time. In 2001, and by the way, the Food and Nutrition Board of the National Academy of Sciences sets the recommended daily allowances. You see those on all the food facts for all the vitamins and minerals. When they looked at boron in 2001, there was not enough evidence to recognize that it was truly an essential element, but they showed a lot of data where it showed that boron had a beneficial role in some physiological processes.
At least new information to me anyway.
Sure. In the background documents, I saw that the current, and I knew the current EPA snarl, that's a funny word, but suggested no adverse response level, it's called the snarl, for boron was 0.6 milligrams of B per liter. And again, that was based on that old 1988 number, and EPA has not done any revisions to any of their regulatory levels since establishing. I mean, the important thing to do is establish what the acceptable daily intake of any chemical is and then to apportion it over the various media. So using the same calculation, and EPA has not done this yet, the revised reference dose for boron would give you a new snarl of 1.4 milligrams of boron per liter. Again, that's that same 122% higher, more than doubling. And that's based upon some default factors that are used to calculate the acceptable contribution that comes from drinking water. As a reference point, I put in the current California Department of Health Services notification level. That used to be called an action level for California drinking water, and that's 1.0 milligrams of B per liter. But that is also based on the old reference dose from 1988, and that has not been revised. Final point, that the current boron levels in California drinking water, and I've looked at some charts. I don't have all of the information and background that you may have looked at over the years, but the amount of water in California, drinking water, that will be exceeding this, what might be the potentially new level of 1.4 milligrams B per liter that comes out of that new reference dose of 14 milligrams of B per liter, it's not going to happen very often. It's certainly going to not happen on an average monthly or average daily intake level. So as a final point, I'd like you to consider this new information and request that if there is some way to kind of decouple the boron story and boron's numbers and boron's safety evaluation that was done by federal EPA from the from the salt. Everything I read has the phrase salt and boron TMDL. I understand that the action on the salt TMDL might at the same time act as a control of boron. It may well do that, but I don't know where it's going in the future in terms of the number that might be set for boron in terms of milligrams of boron per liter. Thank you, and I'd be happy to answer questions.
Question for staff. Your comment on this new reference dose from US EPA.
Yes. It's very interesting information. However, the TMDL is not directed at human consumption of boron. It is directed for the protection of the agricultural water supply. And the useful values of boron for humans and for plants are vastly different. There is a water quality objective in the basin plan right now that is appropriate and is applicable for agricultural supply. That is what is being implemented through the TMDL. I should also point out that the only regulatory language in the TMDL that is applicable.
A drinking water quality prevention or protection, not, I'm quite confused that it's about agricultural, agricultural discharges.
The TMDL is definitely directed towards agricultural supply. However, the regional board will be in developing water quality objectives for salinity and for boron in the reach from the Mendota Dam to Vernalis. They are in the process of that now, and I would imagine that they would be quite interested in this information for that work.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Sahindi?
Ms. Strauss, I hate to say this, but would you like to come up and give US EPA's comments?
I'd be happy to. When EPA revises a reference dose, for example, typically you would see for drinking water issues that under the Safe Drinking Water Act, we and the California Department of Health Services might contemplate whether a new drinking water requirement or maximum contaminant level is appropriate. EPA goes through a process in the regulations of examining contaminants that perhaps should be regulated and currently requires of public water systems reporting under the, quote, unregulated contaminant monitoring rule. So for things like that have come up in California that have not started out as issues elsewhere in the country, like MTBE and perchlorate and the like, gathering that occurrence data across the country is vital in deciding the level of human health exposure and whether to set a new drinking water standard, to revise an existing one, or to set a standard for a new contaminant. EPA has no current plans for issuing a boron drinking water requirement given what is on EPA's plate in the drinking water program for the next 3 years. So while a comment was just made referencing what's on the regional board's plate in terms of basin plan amendments, there is neither under the Clean Water Act nor under the Safe Drinking Water Act any plans in the next 3 years to revise either the National Water Quality Criterion or the Safe Drinking Water Act requirements, being familiar with which ones are being teed up to be promulgated.
Thank you. Mr. Jeff Wingfield. Port of Stockton, I believe you're speaking to item number 11.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and board members. My name is Jeff Wingfield. I'm the environmental manager at the Port of Stockton. It was brought to our attention that board members expressed concern with the port's perceived lack of involvement in the dissolved oxygen TMDL and not taking enough initiative in relation to the DO issue in the Stockton Deepwater Ship Channel. I'm here today to ensure you that this is not the case and update the board on the port's ongoing involvement in being a part of the solution. Over the past 2 years, the port has been involved in the upgrading of the existing aerator at the confluence of the San Joaquin and the Deepwater Ship Channel to maximize its efficiency and provide aeration of the ship channel year-round. The port agreed with the regional board to aerate even after we rescinded our permit to dredge the ship channel in order to improve water quality and benefit fish. We voluntarily provided these upgrades and aeration at a significant cost to benefit water quality, and to our knowledge, it's the only DO enhancement project in place in the Delta. The port is also currently involved in providing location positively to the community and the environment. And we do have some concern with our 401 certification process being held up if water quality goals are not met due to circumstances beyond our control. In closing, we would like to consider that geometry is not in and of itself a source of pollutants and recognize that the port's efforts is going above and beyond the call of duty to address this problem. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wingfield. Mr. David Corey. I believe you're speaking to both items.
Yeah, I am. I think I'll probably focus generally on DO, but David Corey representing the San Joaquin River Exchange Contractors Water Authority. Wanted to go back to one of the issues that came up at the October board meeting of the standard plays of the water users of being defer and delay. I forget who actually coined that term. But I've sat through a lot of these TMDLs over the last couple years, really, and heard like the copper and nickel TMDL issue and heard the TMDLs this morning and sort of see a common theme amongst all of the presentations up here. And I think at times you may get bored hearing the same presentation on different issues all the time. But there really are major problems with some of the regulatory path that's being taken on all of these TMDLs that really line up quite well, and I think they are appropriate comments that are being made. One thing I'd like to point out is in terms of the exchange contractors, we're really not looking at deferring to delaying on water quality issues. We're actively engaged in the selenium control program to deal with selenium coming off the west side and the Grassland Bypass Project. And a result of that, participation of ourselves and other ag districts on the west side have reduced selenium contributions to the rivers significantly, and also corresponding salt loads to the river as well, significant reductions there. We've also involved in the ag waiver process and dealing with developing a water quality program on the west side that is robust, fully funded, and addresses the broad suite of agricultural issues on the west side. So we're not looking here to delay or defer. We're looking to come up with reasonable and effective programs to address real water quality problems in the San Joaquin River in the state of California. Our problem with this DOTMDL is that the problem's pretty clear from my perspective. The Corps of Engineers built a ship channel in the middle of the San Joaquin River. They did it for cost-cutting measures because it was easier to build the channel in the existing channel, to deepen that channel and use that facility. They could have built it someplace else, and we wouldn't have this problem. But they chose to build it there. Dug it down to 37 feet, and you know this story. The algae hits down there, it falls down, loses light, it dies. In the upper section, it actually produces algae. Once it gets in there, it dies, decays, and uses DO. The observation that algae may contribute to the problem really doesn't show that we should be responsible for solving it. Now, this DOTMDL assesses responsibility to the three-legged stool, the ship channel, the flows, and the oxygen-demanding loads. Part of that is algal loads. And dormant until it comes up in another arena. We're going to have to deal with it and can't just sit blindly by and let it be incorporated into the basin plan. The concrete measures that are in this TMDL that the regional board's asked us to do, which are conduct upstream studies, we're already doing that. We've already started the studies to look at the algal dynamics, and we don't have any problem with continuing that. Our real problem here is the assessment of responsibility on those upper algal watershed loads and on the flows. So what we are encouraging the region or the state board to do at this point is to enforce the commitments that the Corps made in their mitigation measures in their EIS and EIR in the 80s to deepen the channel, to condition any dredging permits on fully mitigating the DO problem, the deepwater ship channel, and not to use this sort of shotgun approach at allocating responsibility and allocate it to everyone, hoping that someone can solve the problem. Let's focus this and really target the party that's caused the problem. If I can switch gears just briefly on the salinity issue. We don't believe that the salinity issue is really inappropriate, that we don't need to adopt that TMDL at this point. And Paul Minajian will address this on behalf of the Central California Irrigation District. But in terms of the technical aspect of this TMDL, I just want to briefly address that. The TMDL does allocate responsibility for the imported salts to the Bureau of Reclamation. However, they only give the water users credit for 50% of those imported salts. We're held accountable for the additional 50% allocation. Staff made some changes to say that, well, we can look at this later and maybe modify those numbers. That really doesn't solve the problem. We still are having to assimilate those salts and deal with those salts in the interim. We believe that if this extra margin of safety is necessary within the TMDL process, that it should be allocated to the Bureau, the importer of the salts, and not be put onto the backs of the landowners and the farmers who actually are receiving those salts, because we need to maintain a salt balance to maintain viable agriculture. If you have any questions about those, I'd be happy to answer.
Thank you. Mr. Minajian.
I know that you don't want to be riled upon in regard to why this would be illegal and improper. So let me instead suggest to you that I talk to you very...
I could go for improper. Illegal, I have a hard time with.
Improper and illegal. Okay. The bottom line of it is this is an opportunity for you. And that is you can get out of the mode which sometimes administrative agencies get into of autopilot, and you can say, what's the real problem, and not be constrained by the form of things. And the form of things that is constraining you is TMDLs must be adopted to fill in another notch on the EPA's list and in order to keep the EPA funding coming to you. Now, here's the opportunity. If you ask EPA to determine with you what the Bureau of Reclamation is ultimately going to do about the drainage, how it's going to comply with the San Luis Act, which requires Davis's comments that, gee, you know, if the requirements get too much, we'll just stop delivering the water. We're basically fooling ourselves. We have an opportunity here to adopt a tactic that will actually determine for how long the river is going to be used as a drain. It is being used as a drain. And what we need to do to protect the beneficial uses of that. Now, I've talked to you before about the conflicts which arise when you take a poor tool and you try to make a cabinet out of it, you end up with a mess. And this is a poor tool. And here's the conflict. Every month at Central California Irrigation District, we spend about $100,000 of district taxpayer money for grants and loans to people to conserve water. Yet the DOTMDL says we'd be in violation of that. Next month, if you adopt the DOTMDL, we're in violation of that because we're taking an action which reduces the flow to the San Joaquin River and to the ship channel. Now, we're confused because we also operate, some areas of the districts operate under a waste discharge permit. And you've told us by 2009 to get the drainage of 93,000 acres through the Grassland Bypass Project out of the San Joaquin River. Well, that's flow, and we're doing our damnedest, but the only way we can do it is conserve water. Now, the problem here is that the Bureau is under a legal obligation to provide drainage. It continues to study, but it doesn't file the plan that you're entitled to under your 1641 water right. So why not ask the EPA, what are we going to do about this? Because we can't adopt a TMDL until you, EPA, and Bureau of Reclamation tell us what the plan is. Now, the Bureau is a discharger. There's a legal requirement of a drain. They don't have a permit. We're all out there working towards a goal, which is what? Is it to put less salt in the river and keep more salt on our lands? If that's the goal, the DO requirements tell us that we're in violation of the DO by reducing flow. I think you know that your goal is to have a reasonable management plan to balance these things out. We're not given any idea of how to balance them out in these documents or in the Grassland Bypass waste discharge requirements. I don't think it works. I suggest to you it doesn't work to send it back to the regional board. They don't know how to balance it out because we have two unfinished projects. Thank you. We have an unfinished Army Corps of Engineer project, which when they go out to do something that requires a 401 certification, they withdraw the project. Why don't you ask Mr. Levy and Mr. Grober if they found the 401 certification for the 1980 dredging? They haven't.
Thank you, Mr. Manazian.
Thank you.
Mr. Tim O'Loughlin.
Board analysis was that there were at most from a time period of 1920 to 1998 13 potential violations of the salinity standard at Vernalis. Potential, because what it showed was that there was adequate storage in New Maloney's to meet the salinity requirement at Vernalis. Your staff and their staff in the Central Valley Regional Water Quality Control Board in the staff analysis and in the staff report said what they were concerned about was, yes, they understood that the water quality had been met for 10 years since 1995 to 2005, but they were worried about future potential violations. What that document showed and what they should have understood that document to show was that, in fact, water quality requirements at Vernalis could be met. Well, I haven't heard a response from your staff yet that if the only data that the Central Valley Regional Water Quality Control Board has and the only measurement point and compliance point under the 303D in the standards and objectives is Vernalis and it has been met, that there shouldn't be a delisting of the San Joaquin River, okay? And I don't want to get into a legal argument here, but the only data that your staff has is that data. And in fact, I would suggest they don't even have that because you'll hear in our 303D revised testimony that originally in 1996, the salt and boron was not suggested as a impaired body of water for this lower San Joaquin River. And then when it was added, it was not added, and it was when it was added, it was not suggested that a TMDL be implemented for that. In fact, it wasn't until about a month later that the regional board staff asked EPA to include that in its Federal Register listing. So what happens is there is no, we made a Public Records Act request. You know what, I am going to go to my slide real quickly, if you could. While she's pulling up the slide, the other thing I think is fascinating is we made a comment specifically, and if you are a person of science, and if you are a person who listens to facts, I dare you to look into what you heard from your Central Valley Regional Water Quality Control Board in regard to the comments that we made in regards to the conflict between salt and boron TMDL and the DO TMDL. I don't disagree with your legal counsel that there's probably not a legal conflict. But what we have to do, unfortunately, is on the ground, is implement this. And what we heard from the Central Valley Regional Water Quality Control Board staff is, we don't think it will be significant. Well, where's the testimony? Where's the evidence? Where's the analysis that was done by the Central Valley Regional Water Quality Control Board to show you that? And in fact, we did submit an analysis, and we put it in our papers, in our comments, showing the direct conflict between the DO TMDL and the salt and boron TMDL, especially in critically dry years in July, August, and September. Going back really quickly, I have one minute left, but it's fascinating when you go through this. We made a public records request to both the Central Valley Regional Water Quality Control Board and the State Board. Flip it. Next slide, please. Oh, do I? There's a public records request. Similar request was made. Go to the next one. Boron is listed. It's not listed for a TMDL, and it's listed as a mid-priority. Okay, next slide. Okay, and I cleaned it up so you could see it right there. Okay, and it's targeted for a TMDL, and it says no, and its priority is mid-level. Okay, now, so what, and then Next slide, please. Now, we submitted two public records requests, and as you can imagine, as an attorney who kind of goes crazy about trying to get documents, we asked for any and all documents. Wait just a second.
Mr. O'Loughlin, I'm sure we're all, well, at least Mr. Secundi and I, as hearing officer for the 303D workshop, are looking forward to hearing your presentation there. Could I ask you to just wrap this up for now?
Well, yeah, it's very important because our point is you shouldn't adopt a TMDL when you don't have a basis for a 303D listing. And what I wanted to point out is we requested of the regional board the entire documents for the 303D listing. This is what we received. In this document that we received, this is the only piece of documentation. There's no data, there's no graphs, there's no charts, there's no data. There is nothing in the record supporting the original 303D listing. So we said, well, gee, the state board must have all the documents. So we requested of the state board, I know, I'll finish one, this is my last point. We requested the state board the documents. We received 1,500 documents from the State Water Resources Control Board, okay? We thought, God, there's going to be a treasure trove of documents here regarding this. This is all that supports the 303D listing for salinity and boron on the lower San Joaquin River. And we challenge you and your staff and the regional board to show me any data, facts, or analysis to support that listing. My point is this. The 303 is fundamentally flawed. The TMDL is fundamentally flawed. There is no reason to adopt it. And, in fact, if anything, you should deny it and send it back to the regional board, and we can deal with the 303D listing on December 6th. Thank you.
We look forward to that. Thank you, Mr. O'Loughlin. The staff have a comment or a response?
Sure. Just a couple of brief points. First of all, just please recall that water quality standards don't only include the water quality objectives. They include the beneficial uses as well. And the stretch that we're talking about, which is upstream of where the Bureau is putting in the water to meet the Vernalis objectives through the Stanislaus River, is beneficial use impaired. And so it is proper for listing, first of all. Second of all, even if it weren't impaired, the TMDL is expressed in terms of, as we said, in terms of the water quality objective is a variable. And whether the objective is correct now, whether they establish a new objective that's different, the TMDL is still appropriate because that number changes to whatever the objective is. And finally, as far as the comment about that you cannot do a TMDL if it's not listed on the 303D list, that's also not legally accurate. We do TMDLs under 303D1C for listed waters, but we also have the obligation to do TMDLs for unlisted waters under 303D3. So none of the points really hold water, as it were, and the comments are better directed to the listing process, which is forthcoming.
And I'm sure
a few, but if you look at the real-time data from DWR, CDAC database, you'll find hundreds of violations as a 30-day running average, just weeks on weeks on weeks on end of violations. And so there is a problem. And responding to David and Paul Manassian, you know, if you really want to point a finger at anyone, you can solve the salt and the DO problem simply by shutting off mud and salt sluice. That's where the salt loads come from. That's where the dissolved oxygen loads, the algal loads come from. And the effort of the TMDL, we could easily deal with the exchange contractors. I mean, after all, they used to take San Joaquin water, but they gave up their San Joaquin rights so they could take more DMC water, and consequently they're using the San Joaquin River as a waste vessel, to dispose of their waste. And frankly, I think it's time to if you want to pin the tail on anybody's donkey, I think the exchange contractors are right up there with the core and the port for deepening the channel. This development of this TMDL has been a extraordinarily long process, not counting all of the meetings connected with the development of the consolidated toxic hotspots list and associated cleanup plans. Since January of 2000, we've had 10 updates, workshops, or hearings by the regional board and two by the state board. We've had four draft plans circulated by the regional board for comment, for which written responses were provided. A four-year stakeholder process included more than 150 meetings of the steering committee and the technical committee and the various other committees. Most of these people here were involved in that process. Millions of dollars in special studies were undertaken. I mean, given the absurdly long timelines and the multiple rabbit holes within this TMDL, we can't really say that the resulting product has been worth the resources expended on the process. But it's time to move on. I mean, we support the TMDL as it implements the federal requirements. But this TMDL also purports to implement the dissolved oxygen toxic hotspot cleanup program, and notwithstanding our support of the TMDL, as we have previously pointed out many times, this TMDL fails to comply with the explicit statutory requirements of Section 13395 of the California Water Code, and that's the Bay Protection Toxic Cleanup Chapter. And that section establishes a specific time frame with which the regional board is mandated to reevaluate WDRs of discharges who have caused or contributed to the toxic hotspot. It requires that revisions to the WDRs must ensure compliance with water quality control plans, and it requires that further pollution of toxic hotspots be prevented. Regardless of whether this TMDL is adopted, this board is in continuing violation of the statutory requirements of Section 13395. I'd encourage you to look at that section. It's plain reading, and it lays it out. And so I would suggest that you decouple this TMDL from being the implementation plan for the toxic hotspot. With respect to, and I can if you'd like to take me to take the time, I can read the section to you. It's pretty explicit. Pardon? The board's continuing failure to comply with the express direction of this board in D-1641 to immediately move the salt compliance point upstream of Renales. I can't even get any commitment out of the board as to when they're going to tackle this, has led us to reconsider. I mean, the 303D list identifies the Lower San Joaquin River as impaired for salinity and boron from downstream of Mendota Pool to the Airport Way Bridge near Vinales. This TMDL will only ensure the attainment of water quality standards within a short reach below the confluence of the Stanislaus River. Salt concentrations between Mendota Pool and the Stanislaus will continue to greatly exceed water quality standards. Salt concentrations below Vinales will continue to exceed standards. The basin plan for application of water quality objectives explicitly requires that standards apply to all waters, not just simply at a downstream compliance point. The federal statute, regulations, and policies governing TMDLs require that they must ensure attainment of water quality standards throughout a listed segment. This TMDL, by its own admission, fails to comply with those requirements. I mean, if 7 micromoles is good for Vernalis, it applies at Patterson as well. And so consequently, I can't support adoption of this TMDL unless this board can clarify that it is only applicable to the stretch of river surrounding the gauge at Vernalis, and that it directs the regional board to prepare pursuant to its time schedule a TMDL protective of the rest of the river, or at least a time schedule at which time it will have moved the salt compliant upstream. I mean, this TMDL may be a step forward, but it's a Band-Aid on a gaping wound, and it falls short of what's legally required.
Thank you, Mr. Jennings. I know Mr. Levy is anxious to. Pardon? I know that Mr. Levy is anxious to reply to some of your comments.
Only if you want me to. Actually, I wanted to go back to Mr. O'Loughlin's comments just to protect our record for a moment, if I might. Mr. O'Loughlin was raising a lot of comments about what he obtained through a Public Records Act request. I noted when he put it up on the screen, the Public Records Act request related to the 1996 303D list. We've had several since then. We have the 1998 and the 2002 lists. And furthermore, if he didn't get adequate documents for 1996, this is not the proceeding to raise that. In fact, none of the listing documents or the administrative record for the 303D list is not in this administrative record. And I just want to make it perfectly clear that what's before you is the TMDL record, not the 303D list record. All
right. Would either you or someone from the regional board like to respond to Mr. Jennings' comments, however, in terms of the totality of the river and what the TMDL really is covering?
And also his suggestion or that this apply to specific reach as opposed to, you know, the whole river. I mean, I'd be curious in an answer to that.
Well, I'll let the regional board say, but for the starters, the Vernalis salinity objective has to do with salt intrusion in large measure. And so it was adopted. Am I incorrect? Okay. Yeah. Let me pass the phone then.
Yeah, the Vernalis salinity objective is not in a location where saltwater intrusion from the ocean would have an effect. It is basically there because of...
So what this TMDL establishes is not just attainment of standards at Vernalis, but establishes a framework with which we would be obtaining objectives as they are considered for those upstream reaches.
So then that would sound like you're in agreement with Mr. Jennings that this be limited to a specific area, a smaller area, and not be a TMDL for the entire river.
It is certainly correct in that this will only result in attainment of standards in that downstream reach and just downstream of the Stanislaus.
Then why don't we limit it the way Bill's suggesting?
I would just I'd want to take some care and think about really the implications of what that might mean, because I would in no way want to constrain the major policy decisions that are going to come out of approving this TMDL, and that those would be applicable as we're setting those upstream objectives, because we need to understand if we're taking the right course with, for example, the issue of supply water and things like that, because there are going to be difficulties in meeting those upstream objectives, and you're actually going to be seeing new So it is completely correct that this is only resulting in attainment of standards in that downstream reach in this first phase. There will be additional.
Okay, so I'm still not clear why what Bill's suggesting is. Well, sounds to me like you're making the argument for what Bill's suggesting.
But just with some, if it's subtle and perhaps I'm not describing it correctly, it's important though that what we would be approving here today would be applicable in terms of the TMDL framework, so that we know what we need to do for those next steps with regard to supply water, things like that. If we say this only applies for the downstream and we revisit then the means of attaining those standards in terms of the contribution of the Bureau to the impairment and the contribution from east and west side in terms of different water quality. There are a lot of things in the TMDL that we've discussed all through our process.
But
if we somehow exclude and said, well...
Somehow I doubt that Bill's excluding irrigated water runoff from his concerns. It's a rough guess, but I don't think that's what Mr. Jennings is suggesting.
If it's only that he just wants to make clear that this only results in attainment of standards of downstream, there's no dispute with that.
Mr. Jennings?
And in follow-up...
Yeah, I'm sorry, Michael. Go on.
Yeah, in follow-up, Mr. Jennings is correct. We have to meet standards in all stretches of all water bodies. That's a matter of fact. And how the regional board gets that, Joanne's about to point out some language in the amendment.
Hang on a second. Mr. Jennings?
Yeah, I was just going to say that this is a TMDL that will solve the problem from Mendota Pool to Airport Bridge, but it doesn't. It addresses the problem south of the Stanislaus, and we need to address that. But in 1999, this board explicitly ordered the regional board to move the salt point compliance point upstream.
Right.
And I have not, there have not been a couple of months passed since then that I haven't asked the regional board, you know, asked Rudy Schnog on the ag unit, when are we going to do it? And without taking time, let me just say that I have gotten 100 stories. We're just there. We're
then the means of attaining those standards in terms of the contribution of the Bureau to the impairment and the contribution from east and west side in terms of different water quality. There are a lot of things in the TMDL that we've discussed all through our process.
But
if we somehow exclude and said, well,
somehow I doubt that Bill's excluding irrigated water runoff from his concerns. It's a rough guess, but I don't think that's what Mr. Jennings is suggesting.
If it's only that he just wants to make clear that this only results in attainment of standards of downstream, there's no dispute with that.
Mr. Jennings?
And in follow-up.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Michael. Go on.
Yeah, in follow-up, Mr. Jennings is crying.
Let me just say that I have gotten 100 stories. We're just there. We're going to do it. We're going to do it. And
Mr. Jennings.
I think you need to tell him.
Mr. Jennings, why don't I hear the 101st story then? I wasn't here back in 1999. I'd like to know why it hasn't been moved.
I would appreciate
it. So let me ask the regional board, why hasn't it?
Originally, we were in a process to do that back in 99, and that was originally expected to precede actually the development and completion of this TMDL. But even this portion of the TMDL has been delayed. And this is, it's a resource issue, and that we have completed now the TMDL before we've completed that upstream objective work. There have been a number of things that have gone on at the region board, including the irrigated lands program, the renewal of the ag waiver, things like that. And there have been shifts of staff directed towards that. And that's part of it. And it's also the part of it is to get, in the last couple of years, then more clear buy-in in terms of the approach that we're going to need to be taking to do that upstream work, which is going to be exceedingly difficult. If there are a number of policy issues that are of concern today, there will be more as we move upstream because it will be difficult to attain those standards. As Bill had said, the same numbers should apply upstream. That is potentially the case, but we're going to have to consider the difficulty it's going to be to attain those standards. So it has been a resource issue in terms of shifting.
I understand in terms of a resource issue. Here's what's disturbing me. For the people that have to comply with the TMDL, that's also a very difficult task. And I like to do a TMDL that has some scientific basis. And if the point has not been moved upstream, I'm getting uncomfortable as to whether or not we do have the scientific basis. I have to tell you that. So it's been 6 years since 1999, and we're almost in 2006 at this point in time, and I still hear no timetable as to when that point is going to be moved. Mr. Levy, are you anxious to say something?
Yes, please. There's a couple of things. First of all, I just want to bring everybody, I appreciate the concern, and it is well taken, but this TMDL is about the portions of the San Joaquin River between Mendota Dam and Vernalis, and it's not the entire stretch of the river all the way upstream. What we're relying on to meet the Vernalis objectives is flows from the Stanislaus River, and we don't have similar flows upstream of Stanislaus to be able to supplement or ensure that the standards would be met upstream. So there are some political difficulties. There are some practical difficulties in doing it, and I presume that's in large measure why it hasn't happened yet. That said, 1641 does contain some findings by the State Board to get it done. And you can certainly address that in due course. But as to whether or not the TMDL is appropriate, I think Mr. Jennings said that he supports the TMDL. We should get moving with it.
That's not what he said.
I don't believe that's what I heard from Mr. Jennings. I heard just the opposite. Maybe it's late in the day and I've listened to too much testimony, but I'd like to hear Mr. Jennings specifically. Give me a yay or nay, Mr. Jennings. Are you supporting this TMDL or are you not supporting it?
Actually, if you could also please repeat your recommendation.
This TMDL is a step forward. It does not fully comply with the law. It's kind of like...
The questions you're hearing from the new board members are, what's the payment schedule for the other $80?
And interest.
I think that's where, at least it's not another, Prop B gene analogy. So the question is, one, the sort of the limit, I think I understand the reason for sort of the limiting language that Mr. Jennings is looking for to make it clear what this does and what it doesn't do. So it doesn't create the impression that, in fact, it does a whole lot more than is getting done. I think that's where Mr. Jennings is trying to go with that. I would like to see that language put in, and I'm sure you all can draft that much better than I can to be specific along those lines. The second piece was the question I'm hearing from my colleagues, which is, are they going to get interest on the $80 or not? What are we going to do? And finally, the last thing, and it's not just, and I'm not directing this just at this regional board. This is the second TMDL that's come before us today that we've been told is low hanging fruit, and it's taken 6 years or more to do. It's a frightening concept, I know we've talked about prioritization of TMDLs, but we got to somehow figure out either low-hanging fruit needs to be reclassified or it needs to be processed a whole lot faster.
Any final comments before we move on to Mr. Herrick, who's been waiting very patiently?
If I may, the TMDL does include a commitment by the regional board to adopt salinity and boron water quality objectives by June 2006. So that is part of the implementation schedule and part of the phased approach.
And are you guys on schedule to do that?
Called a scoping meeting for those upstream objectives last May.
Okay.
And but I must admit that date, based on, of course, when that was crafted, that was under the assumption that this board would hear this item last spring, and we're now at this fall. It's not that we've not been doing work on those upstream objectives, but again, awaiting the outcome of this so we know what we're proposing for upstream is approvable, is that we're on the right track.
So the answer is no then.
So I think it's going to be a tight schedule to achieve that by June at this point, but we've already held the scoping meeting, and we are committed to have another public workshop in this January.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Herrick.
Thank you, Madam Chair, board members. John Herrick for the South Delta Water Agency. I'm quick to criticize, so I should be quick to compliment. I would like to compliment staff, especially Mr. Levy, for their answers. I think those are very, very responsive to the comments before, and the legal analysis is absolutely correct. One of the important things we heard today is that the Bureau doesn't want any responsibility for ruining the San Joaquin River. I think you need to take that into consideration. They clearly told you that. You can't pin it on us. Well, that's already been determined through innumerable proceedings, specifically D-1641, which says we find that the principal cause of elevated salinity levels in the San Joaquin River is the operation of the CVP. Now, that leaves us with the TMDLs, which are the subject here. South Delta supports them. If we had crafted them ourselves, they would have been different, but we support implementation of them. Why? Because it's been 40 years of adverse impacts to my clients, 40 years. And we're now getting to the point where we're going to enforce standards and we're going to adopt actions upstream which decrease your nutrient loading by a certain date. It says, let's try these other things, and if we have to, then we'll look at maybe ordering you to do something. That's what it says. The salt one is very similar. It actually recently allowed the San Joaquin Water Quality Management Group to try to implement those things to correct their actions, to correct the problem. It's the implementation that gives you the flexibility, and these programs have that flexibility. And my final point I want to make extremely clear to you. The people who are opposing the TMDLs are advocating in this and other forums for less water of a poor quality in the San Joaquin River. That's what they're advocating. You've heard it here, and you'll hear it in the other forums. That's an unbelievable position, and one would think people that say that would be escorted out of the Water Quality Control Board's hearing room, but that's not how the rules work. That's what they want. Why do they want that? Because they have conserved water, which means they reuse their water. They concentrate those salts. Everybody upstream is concentrating the salts and dumping them in the river. And what are they doing with the conserved water? They're selling it to someone else. Now, is selling water evil? No. But when the person who concentrates their salts and then sells their water, rather than have any downstream obligation, argues against the TMDL, well, you know why they're arguing against it. They don't want any of their water addressing these downstream problems. Now, what's the liability of these upstream parties? That's decided in other forums. That's allocated through responsibilities. We know that it's the Bureau originally, but that doesn't change the fact that the extra water that the exchange contractors are selling, that used to go down the river. We know that the water that the San Joaquin River Group Authority is selling, that used to go down the river at different times. They don't want any downstream responsibilities, and they're very consistent in this forum and other forums. And I think you should take that into consideration when somebody says, oh, you're presenting us with a horrible choice that we're going to have to do this. The tension between the two TMDLs is not a choice, it's a threat to you. If you make us have a downstream responsibility, we're going to screw up something else. That's what they're telling you. Nobody here thinks that if the Bureau, in cooperation with its contractors, dilutes the salt coming down the river, nobody in this room thinks that we'll be here in 4 years going, well, you didn't decrease the load, so we're going to penalize you. That's never going to happen. If they solve the problem, everybody's happy. But that's not what they're trying to do. They're not trying to solve the problem. They're trying to avoid having responsibility assigned to them. So we encourage you to adopt the two TMDLs. Thank you very much.
Mr. Levy.
May I offer a suggestion that might address Board Member Katz's concern? In whereas 2 on page 1 of the resolution, at the end of the sentence, instead of a period, put a comma and add the language, that is, between Mendota Dam and the bridge at Airport Way at Vernalis. So the whole whereas would read, on September 15, 2004, the Central Valley Water Board adopted resolution number R5-2004-0108, attachment 1, amending the basin plan to incorporate a TMDL to control the discharge of salt and boron in
between Mendota Dam and Vernalis.
Okay.
The objective right now only applies to Vernalis. However, the regional board is in the process of developing a salinity and boron objectives for the reach above Vernalis. Okay. It is a matter of timing.
And what timeline is that on?
Well, once again,
I hesitate to ask.
It was delayed probably about 6 months.
That's the same thing.
Once again, I can tell you that for many years we've been working with the regional boards, and when they were coming to us and asking us about the approach they want to take on these two TMDLs, actually, because they aren't the normal pollutant discharge TMDL approach. And so when we're starting to consider issues like channel geometry and flow issues, the regional board wanted to act very carefully. And so they did want it, as Les said, as Mr. Grober said, they wanted to take this on and one chunk at a time, make sure the state board was okay with it before they went forward. I'd like to remind the board that these were set for the state board's agenda in April, and they were pulled off the agenda, and they're coming back now. And that's not responsibility of the regional board. That wasn't anything that they had to do with.
Any final comments from the regional board representatives? All right. Discussion, Mr. Katz?
No.
Mr. Secundi? Do I hear a motion on these two TMDLs?
I'll move them with the language that Mr. Levy just added.
Is there any way to address Mr. Jennings' second concern with respect to the timing?
If it's the board's pleasure, the board can include some direction to set some time frame as to when you'd like them to bring that objective before you.
Let me ask the regional board again. What is your time frame for the objective?
Originally, the language that is in the basin plan was to have those objectives to you by June of this year, but because of the delays, the ongoing complexity here, I think...
Of 06 or 05?
Of 06.
06.
That's not this year.
This coming year. That 6 months should allow sufficient time to
so you're saying approximately a year from now?
Approximately a year from now, getting it so that it would be to this board.
That's what I was going to say, too. Let's make it September.
All right. 9 months, September 2006.
Could I change that to 18 months? So that no.
Nice job.
Keep trying. We'll get down to 8.
So we have a motion. We have a second.
I will second, and I second a little bit reluctantly because one of our board members, Mr. Baggett, is not here, and he is certainly the board member for Region 5, and I miss his counsel here, I will tell you that, because he is the major contact. But I know he has had an opportunity to look at these in quite some detail at this point in time. This is by no means a perfect TMDL. I think we all recognize that. It is a first step is what it amounts to. And I certainly recognize the competing parties, and I also recognize the expense that's involved in doing something like this. So I do not second.
Regional Water Quality Control Board shall adopt water quality objectives for salinity and boron from Mendota Dam to the Airport Way Bridge near Vernalis by September 2006.
Or Darth Vader comes out. I don't know.
And Mr. Landau, I would ask that the regional board get in touch with Dr. Coughlin and explore the information that he provided to this board today.
And that would be resolve number 3.
Oh, thank you. We still have open.
That's what I. Oh. That's
Wow, Dr. Coughlin.
It's late.
We still have an open item, which is item number 10. Is there a further discussion? Okay.
Some of you were at the workshop when we talked about Rainbow Creek last time, and I guess I was probably the most vociferous member in terms of saying, why now, why this? It is low-hanging fruit. I'm not certain that it is the most urgent TMDL. It is an impaired water body. It does need a TMDL. Again, if I had to wave my magic wand, hush up, Mr. Katz, I'm speaking. Again,
you may stop now. Mr. Katz is ready to vote.
Well, that's unusual. He actually is. I'm really trying to tell the regional boards, let's not just go after the low-hanging fruit. Come on, guys. We want to go after the impaired water bodies that are really the most critical for the state of California. So we would like to see more emphasis there. If it's taking this long to bring us TMDLs that are not perfect for water bodies that we consider low-hanging fruit, I'm very nervous as to how long it's going to take to tackle those water bodies that are a lot more complex. Having said that, I vote yay.
Well, actually, now it's my turn to talk before we move on. In light of the discussion we just had regarding the priorities of TMDLs, I would like to put on an upcoming board meeting or workshop agenda a report from the staff regarding the schedule for upcoming TMDLs and lead that to a discussion of the priorities, how those TMDLs were prioritized, and more importantly, how this continuing process of TMDL development is being prioritized. Let do focus on the areas that causes the greatest threat to water quality.
Maybe you do that on the January 18th meeting.
And Mr. Katz will come back just for that. All right. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any oppose? Any abstain? It moves. Thank you. And the meeting is adjourned.